best video in the world, but it'll be there. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. It's time for Rick Smith. And always, 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 Gina, Judy.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now. Now.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Newly elected Pennsylvania State Senator Judy Schwank's going to be here talking about the campaign, her vision as we move forward. And as all reports have it, she is going to hit the ground running. And that's a good thing. Also, writer-activist Sally Kahn's going to be here talking about her piece on why unions are a good thing, and you'll never guess where it was. FoxNews.com, which is why one of our listeners sent me the piece and said, hey, can you believe this? And amazingly so. Also, in the third hour, Wisconsin State Representative Nick Milroy is going to be here talking about the recall effort and all of the stuff. You know, the big hugging event yesterday, you know, because, well, actually it was on Tuesday, I believe, the 15th, the big hugging event happened. Yes, it was bad. The police had to be called. Fox News reported it as an assault. The guy was hugged him. Wow. Anyway, big news today. The state, or the Senate passed the short-term budget bill. The Senate voted 87-13, to pass the sixth short-term spending bill, so that we can avoid a government shutdown. 9 Republicans, 3 Democrats, and our good friend, independent, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont voted against the measure. And, you know, I could only assume that Bernie's vote was, saying, look, at some point we've got to deal with the real problem and pass a real budget. I mean, we are in March already, and this has been a couple of months in the making. It's time to get this done. This short bill includes $6 billion in spending cuts. It will go to the president's desk. I'm pretty sure that he will sign it because it's going to give them another couple of weeks through the week of April 8th to come up with an agreement. But beyond the dollars and cents, the fundamental disagreements are still there. Republicans have got their, well, you know, their ideology. They want to end NPR. They want to end Planned Parenthood. They want to go through all of this stuff and go after and bury, you know, get their political hatchet and really stick it to those who they don't agree with. Anyway, the House earlier this week passed that stopgap measure. 54 Republicans voted against it, and really against their grand poobah, Speaker John Boehner, by voting no on this. The House, like I said, has voted to cut off funding for NPR. The legislation was by a guy named Doug Lamborn, Republican from Colorado. Now, look, the Obama administration says, you know, we're strongly opposed to it. And it's not going to go anywhere in the Democratic-controlled state in the Senate. So, you know, it's, again, a whole bunch of we're putting on the show for our base. Anyway, the final vote in the House was 228 to 192. One Republican voted present. Seven Republicans joined 185 Democrats to avoid, to oppose the measure. And, you know, I think it's important. I really do. I think it's important to stick up for NPR. Because this really, pure and simple, is a backdoor move by Republicans. Much like the whole Acorn thing, much like the current attack on Planned Parenthood. This is how they, this is their modus operandi. This is their MO, man. They catch on to something and they don't let go. Now, what they hope is that these groups aren't going to stand up for themselves. And it frustrated me when Acorn didn't. It's frustrated me when Planned Parenthood has kind of backed away from it. But NPR is saying, hey, wait a minute. We didn't do anything wrong here. This was a hatchet job, pure and simple. And the fact that they've given this kid, with his creative editing skills, a power position in the country, to me, is just absolutely amazing. But it is what it is, and it shows how simple some can be, by not using the critical thinking skills I wish we were teaching more of in schools. Anyway, a bill being pushed through by Representative Dennis Kucinich, calling for a strict timetable for withdrawal from Afghanistan, that would mandate an end to combat operations by the end of this year, of course, was shot down. But it does highlight the differences between the thought processes. Think about the Afghan war, which costs us about $113 billion a year and got almost no debate. But the NPR thing that costs us $3.2 million, somehow that is the end of the world in the making. Now, if we got out of Afghanistan, we could probably save about, 40,000 times as much as we could by canceling NPR, by cutting them off. And again, this isn't about being fiscally responsible. It's about hatred. It's about political payback. A group called the National Priorities Project. They came up with some numbers on showing how ending the war could help free up money for a countless number of domestic priorities. Things that we used to think are important. You know, like the nearly 14 million veterans, who could receive VA care for a year, if we would just get the heck out of there. Or the nearly 14 million scholarships for kids to go to college for a year. Or the more than 19 million students who could receive Pell Grants. The health care for some 55 million low-income children. These are the priorities that we're taking. Make big rocks, or actually smaller rocks, smaller. Or educate our children, take care of our veterans. Or, you know, hire more teachers. Another 1.6 million teachers could be hired. Almost 2 million firefighters could be hired. We could put another 14 million kids in Head Start. We could hire another 1.6 million police officers. But it comes down to priorities. We need to make small rocks smaller. We need to turn that sand pit, into a sand pit. Representative Ron Paul, who I don't always see eye to eye with, blasted the Republicans for going after NPR and supporting the war. He said, quote, "The fiscal conservatives are going to be overwhelmingly in support of slashing NPR and go home and brag about how they're such great fiscal conservatives, yet at the same time, they won't consider for a minute cutting a real significant amount of money," meaning what's going on in Afghanistan, of which, you know, one of the things I absolutely agree with Congressman on is getting out of there, Jake. I mean, at some point, you go, $113 billion that we're just throwing into a sandpit.
Well, I think the polls that I saw, Rick, would agree with you. More and more and more people are realizing, look, we're broke. We just don't have the money. Not only that, I think it's time that we admit that we just can't be the policemen of the world.
I see. I'm not going to buy that frame. It's not that we're broke. We have our misplaced priorities. The Republicans keep telling us we're broke, but, you know, I keep seeing the billionaire list going up and up and up. Every time Forbes comes out with a new list, the wealthy keep getting wealthier. So we're not actually broke. Broke means you can't pay your bills. Broke means, sorry, they're come taking your furniture. Sorry, you're out on the curb. That's not happening.
Well, let's put it this way. We haven't found we haven't found a political will to address the real issues, and that's based on a preconceived notion that we are broke. Are we in deficit spending? Yes. Are priorities skewed? Yes. Are we technically broke? No, you are correct in that, right?
You know, I said back when we decided, when Bush decided he was going to get us into this mess, I said the best way to decide if we really want to do this is go to the citizens and say, you know what? We've got to levy a 1% tax. Every person on every bit of income, regardless of what it is, you got to pay a 1% war tax. And we are going to fund the war effort. We're not going to do it on the credit card. We're not going to borrow. We're going to pay for it. And nobody was in favor of that. Personally, I think if you're going to go blow things up and you're going to do cause the chaos that we've caused, we should pay for it. Now, what happened was is you got the Rumsfelds and the what was it, his name? Jeez, I can't even remember what his name was. The guy who went to the World Bank, then had the affair and got Wolfowitz. Wolfowitz told us it wasn't going to cost us a dime. It was going to be free. We could go blow things up.
They were going to use their oil.
And it was free. It was all free. Wouldn't cost us a dime. And it was just like, you know, the nuclear weapons. They were north, south, east, and west of Tikrit. They were all over. Yet they never found them. It's free. And that's the Republican way. I mean, really stop and think about this. We have really screwed up priorities. Well, we're telling children in this country, sorry, we're not going to fund food stamps. Sorry, we're not going to have education programs. Sorry, we're going to cut health care. But we're going to develop new missiles, and we're going to make sand particles even smaller. Because that's about all we're doing over there.
Well, you know, when you have people in Congress who propose reasonable proposals that many Americans actually agree with. And polls have said, Congressman Schakowsky, her proposal basically wants to ask the wealthy to pay their fair share. She wants to reconfigure the tax structure so that they are paying their fair share. And under her bill, anybody that makes over $1 million, they would be taxed at instead of a lower rate for capital gains, they would be taxed at their normal rate within their tax structure. And just by doing that, reconfiguring a little bit, the first year, we could put into the Treasury $80 billion. Now, even in terms of Washington, $80 billion the first year on one bill is considerable money. But do you think she doesn't have a prayer?
God, there's no chance.
She doesn't have a prayer. The Republicans aren't even going to consider it. No. And therein lies the problem. There is no fairness on the Republican side when it comes to taxes.
Well, here's the thing, and this is another one of those priority things, and another one of those where Republicans say one thing, want to do another. They do something in Washington, they go back and they tell their people, oh, we're doing something completely opposite. House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan, from Wisconsin, nonetheless, he was at a meeting this morning. He had this sit down with Politico. You know, it's like they do in Washington. They have a whole bunch of these forums or symposiums, whatever you want to call them, where they call these people in and they say a bunch of dumb stuff. And Ryan was talking about the needs of government to prioritize its spending. And, you know, again, you know, you go back to that core function of government, our argument that the Republicans keep making. And he was talking about scientific research as one of them, job training as another, and defense. Here's what he actually said. Personally, I think you've got to get government back to focus on its core mission, its core ideas. You know, basic scientific research. In education, we have less of a role money-wise, 1K through 12, but more of a role post-secondary. He goes on to say, you know, get job training going so we can have that kind of system that we should focus on for lifelong learning. Yet these are people. This is a guy, and this is a party, who has cut numerous job training programs, has cut enormous amounts of funding. You look at H.R. 1, their budget bill, calls for massive cuts, almost half, over $2 billion in job training. And he's going to say that it's something that he thinks is important? Really? You look at the budget bill, it slashes funding for scientific research. I'm just not getting the point there. And I guess these are those people who say one thing and do something else. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, the newly elected State Senator Judy Schwenk. We're right back after that.
I'll never bend. I'm with you now.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Thousands of workers and their supporters sent a message to the Republican government of Michigan on Wednesday. Jesse Russell reports.
Thousands descended on the capital of Michigan Wednesday to express their concerns over legislation that would grant the state the power to appoint emergency financial managers who could strip teachers and workers of collective bargaining rights. The taxpayers were also concerned about a budget that provides $1.8 billion in tax cuts to business while making up for those cuts on the backs of low-income workers. Michigan Nurses Association President Jeff Breslin.
It's a personal insult to nurses and to everybody here to watch as our state government deliberately and maliciously propose laws that leave deep, bleeding cuts in our patients, our families, and our communities' lives.
Jerry Alpizer is a small business owner from Traverse City, Michigan, and he wants to know where his tax break is.
And I count myself among you because I don't get tax breaks. If I don't make money, I don't get a bailout. This trickle-down crap is over.
State Senator Coleman Young Jr., son of Detroit's first African-American mayor, told the crowd that it was time to draw a line in the sand.
If we rise with one voice and say, you will not take our rights, you will not take our liberties, and we will not let this stand. Give us liberty or give us death!
American Postal Workers Union members will soon be voting on a tentative contract agreement that was reached this week. APWU President Cliff Guffey says it provides a 3.5% pay raise over the course of the contract, protects retirement and health care benefits, and safeguards jobs. And Guffey says it underscores that public worker collective bargaining works.
With workers across the country fighting to defend their right to collective bargaining, our tentative agreement is a testament to the value of a great American freedom, the right of workers to have a voice at work and to negotiate for a better life. We are grateful that we continue to enjoy this right, and we stand in solidarity with workers across the country who are fighting to keep it for themselves.
U.S. Representative Jan Schakowsky has heard the call of workers in protests nationwide that in order to really fix government deficits, the rich have to pay their fair share. Schakowsky has introduced a Fairness in Taxation Act in Congress. It creates a new tax bracket for income $1 million a year and above, and would also tax capital gains and dividends as ordinary income for those making $1 million a year or more. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
You know, I said last week, pretty much all last week, that the election on Tuesday was going to be that moment that voters were going to have to show their displeasure for the governor's budget. And, you know, the guy who was running on the Republican side gave all the fodder you could possibly want by coming out and saying he was all in favor of it, wanted it, applauded it, welcomed it, all of that. I thought a really, really bad political move. And I do believe a little bit cost him. Just a little bit. But the winner of that election in the 11th senatorial district here in Pennsylvania, our newly elected state Senator Judy Schwenk is on the phone. Judy, welcome to the program.
Hi.
You have got to be worn out at this point.
I'm not worn out. I'm just so busy answering Facebook greetings and, you know, trying to catch up with thank you notes and so forth that it's been a lot of work, but wonderful.
So
great
let me be one to tell you that was the easy part.
Yeah. it was a tough race.
The attacks are going to come fast and furious, and I fear that with the with the balance of power in this state, that working people are really under the gun, and it's going to be tough for folks like you and for Democrats, to be honest, in this cycle.
Well, I would agree with you, but this is the time to speak out. I mean, certainly the governor's budget, as you mentioned, really mobilized people. It was amazing to me how quickly, after the cuts to higher education, for example, were announced, that contributions started coming in online from university towns like State College and Kutztown.
And how do we deal with that? I mean, you know, we've been talking on the program here, this kind of massive, really disinvestment in the future, this stealing from the future, to me is really a short-sighted view, and it's just plain wrong. But how do we educate people? How do we get people into the process? Because I think right now, the only way we stop something like this is to get the kind of protests we're seeing around the country.
Well, actually, that is starting to happen. In fact, today at Kutztown University, students did protest, and our local newspaper, the Reading Eagle, has been covering stories of students at some of our local colleges. Penn State Berks campus, for example, and Kutztown, you know, they're worried. They're really, really concerned about how they're going to make, you know, the tuition payments that they know are coming.
Yeah, you know, and I've, one of the things that worries me, and look, you know, I think most middle-class folks, they have the dream of sending their kids off to school. And when you look at a 52-53% cut in higher education, that's going to make that dream, well, a dream.
Exactly. You know, prior to running for this office, I served as dean of a private college, Delaware Valley College in Doylestown. And, you know, talking with students and discussing their student loans, it's just astounding the kind of debt that these kids are coming out of school with, and in this kind of job market as well. So, I think there's a lot of things coming together here that are going to make this really problematic.
I agree. I think what's happened is the federal government has walked away from funding on a certain level, leaving that to the states, and the states have walked away from it, and leaving it to the people who can least afford it, the folks who have to get it, because we live now in a knowledge-based economy.
Right, and it defeats the whole purpose of a public university. This was our opportunity, the middle class, for getting a quality education. And it will become out of reach. That really concerns me.
Here's what bothers me. You know, I look at the fact that a couple of weeks ago the governor let adult basic go away and basically killed that, stripping 42,000 people, working people, of insurance, telling them, here, take this. It's four times more expensive and then half of what you were getting, but you've got something, while handing out big tax breaks to corporations. And I say, you know, at some point, don't we have to talk about priorities? Don't we have to talk about, values?
Right, and I think that's the message that the Senate Democrats will bring forward. You have to try to develop a more sane budget proposal that addresses, you know, some of these huge issues that people are facing. It just doesn't make sense.
So when you were on the campaign trail, this had to be, at least the last week, a huge issue. What were the people telling you?
Oh, people are furious. One, you know, we just talked about higher education, but, you know, go back to what's happening at K-12. People get it. They understand that if the state doesn't come through, as they have been slowly over the years, you know, declining their percentage of the amount of funding that they provide to you know, public education, K-12, you know, they get it, that this is going to raise property taxes. So, you know, the idea that, you know, at the state level we're not going to raise taxes doesn't help us. Because we'll end up paying for it somehow.
Yeah, you're right. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with newly elected State Senator Judy Schwartz. She's now representing the 11th Senatorial District here in Pennsylvania. Next week, I understand I should first ask you, when do you plan on taking office? When can we see you in the halls?
I will be inaugurated April 5th. I just learned that today, Rick. But I actually have started, you know, going into the office. I'll be there full-time Monday on. And we'll be heading up to Harrisburg to listen in on the budget hearings, although I can't actively participate.
Right.
But I can be there taking notes, and I will be.
Because next week there's a hearing on prevailing. They're having a meeting on prevailing wage.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I got to be honest. This is what has given us and has maintained for us a very strong building and construction industry in this state.
Right.
And if you look across the country, the states that have done away with prevailing wage, what you've seen is you've ended up with a low wage transient workforce. I don't want to see that here. Yet we've got Republicans in the Senate who are bent on, and really in the House, who are bent on taking this away.
No, it's a real concern. And when you look at, you know, the building trades economy right now, I mean, everything is slow. My husband happens to be in that field, and it's not gotten better. So to have this taken away will, you know, really impact jobs for our local people. And I'm also very concerned about it.
So let me ask you, on April 5th, when they inaugurate you, what's the first thing you're going to do? What's the first piece of legislation you want to, you know, where's your passion?
Well, my passion is agriculture, actually, and environment. And, you know, certainly I'll be following the Marcellus Shale issue here in the state and trying to document what the impacts are. And people are very concerned about that, no matter where they live. And, you know, how this industry will develop in the state is of great concern. So that's certainly a priority. The budget, again, I mean, that's right on the front burner for me. But also looking at, you know, the education issue, maybe perhaps legislation that will help provide more credit for folks who use 526 plans to save for education in our state schools.
Yeah, it's an interesting, you know, we're looking at that. I have 529s for my kids.
529. I'm sorry, I said the wrong number. Thanks. Yeah.
And, well, I thought there was something different because the state of Pennsylvania has, I think it's called a TIP plan.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can buy, I guess you can buy at today's rates for down the road.
Exactly. And that helped me put my daughter through school.
But, you know, it's those kind of policies. It's that kind of vision that I think, and you don't have to agree with me, but that I think the people who are in control now, who seem to despise government, who seem to want to do everything they can do to control and destroy, it's that kind of leadership and vision that I don't see.
No, and I'm concerned because it goes too far. We're cutting at the bone here. And it's really disconcerting because the access to, you know, a better life is, you know, hinges on some of these programs, particularly when you look at education.
Yeah, I mean, and I look at this and this ideology that we need to run government like a business.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing it across the 12 states where Republicans are firmly in control. This idea that we need to run like a business, that is not how a government should run. This idea, and one of the things that drives me nuts is this idea that we need to run our government like our kitchen table. Well, if we did that, we would cut everybody off unemployment. We would cut every social programs in times of economic downturn, and the suffering would be magnified many times over.
Yes. I mean, I certainly understand what you're saying. And, you know, having been in government, serving as a county commissioner, it really is true that government is not a business. It doesn't mean that you can't use business-like principles and, you know, try to drive the best bargain for your tax dollars.
Right. But it doesn't mean you can't be responsible.
Right.
Insane.
Right. You need to be responsible in how you spend and, you know, how you use those resources. It's people's hard-earned money. But, you know, most of us would agree we don't want to see children suffer. We want to make sure that our kids get a great education and those that are in need are somehow helped.
Yeah. What was your most memorable moment on the campaign trail? Because this was a quick kind of election. I mean, this was really, I think it had to be really intense and really, really, well, quick.
It was, you know, I can't say there was a singular moment, but the many times that people came up to me and said, you know, Senator Opaque, really, who, you know, the late Senator Opaque, whose position I will fill, was, you know, such a wonderful person. He would do anything to help people. And it was just incredible how, you know, one public official could touch so many lives. It was really inspirational to me.
Yeah, my wife actually told me a similar story. My wife, before I met her, was a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And before we got married, that had to change. I'm kidding, but she didn't know she was anything. It was just her parents were Republican. She said okay, but she really liked Senator Opaque, and she had nothing but very good things to say about him. So you know what you're saying is you know amplified in my home as well. Anyway, Senator, I appreciate your time. I wish you nothing but the best of luck. And we would love to have you back again as these fights that I'm sure you're going to be fighting ramp up and move forward.
Yeah, you know, as I become more engaged, that kind of opportunity will be wonderful, and certainly the feedback as well. I appreciate talking with you tonight.
Thanks so much, Senator Swank. Appreciate
okay, good night.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Dick Smith.
Every state legislature has its share of incompetent, insensitive, and often incomprehensible goobers sitting in seats of power. Sometimes you have to wonder who helps them work the doorknobs to get out of their houses each morning. For some reason, Texas seems to have more than its share of grade A goobers serving in our state capital. One is Debbie Riddle, a right-wing Republican ideologue from the town of Tomball. Representative Riddle is presently in a pout. She's offended that so many people have been offended by an immigration bill she introduced. It calls for fining and jailing people who, quote, intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly hire undocumented immigrants. Okay, that's a pretty popular position in our state, but then she stumbled and tumbled by adding a little exemption. People who hire unauthorized laborers to work in their homes will not be fined or jailed. Yes, it's a nanny loophole for the privileged class. They rail about people they callously brand as illegal aliens. Yet, they want a steady supply of these low-wage powerless workers to care for their children, clean their houses, and tend their yards. They don't want to mess with checking documents, so Debbie blithely gives them a pass, allowing them to hate illegals and have them, too. How happy! She then demonstrated her deep grasp of the immigration issue by explaining that Latinos are coming into our state illegally because we put, quote, a big old bowl of candy out for them. Yeah, Madam Lawmaker, those housekeeping and yard jobs, as well as chicken plucking and roofing jobs, are plenty cushy and well-paying, which is why so many of your neighbors are scrambling to grab such work for themselves. This is Jim Hightower saying, pious politicos should try walking in the shoes of people they denigrate before they legislate. Reality can be a useful teacher if you're willing to listen to reality.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, Hightower Lowdown.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Our quote of the day comes from David Francis. There's something missing in Washington's political scene, he writes. A genuine populist, a prominent politician persistently pointing out a decades-long drift of income and wealth to a tiny fringe at the top. And, you know, we see this happening, but nobody's out there saying, hey, something's going on. And you look at Michigan Republican Representative Dave Camp. He's the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. He wants to lower the tax rates for both individuals and corporations from 35 down to 25%. And you got Max Backdoris, who's the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, issuing a statement saying, yeah, we want to reform our tax code. Exactly what does reform mean? Does that mean stealing more from the working class and giving to the wealth class? Anyway, tax experts say that Camp's idea of cutting rates down to 25% could cost us around $2 trillion over the next 10 years. So basically handing more money to the very wealthy and adding to the debt. How very Republican. I got an email last night that caught my eye, and I wanted to go through some of it. Jackson writes, Rick, I heard the end of your tax talk last night about the 50s. Where'd you get the numbers? How'd you calculate income? Can you send me an overview? Because I think the people I work with would think they are overtaxed and underserved, would be interested. Keep up the good work. Love the show. I only wish he was on earlier. We were talking last night about a bus driver, a guy named John Nelson, and a CEO of Johnson & Johnson named William Weldon. Our bus driver friend, he earned $159,000 in 2009. $159,000 he earned. About $110,000 of that was overtime. You look at Mr. Johnson, or Mr. Weldon with Johnson & Johnson, whose board of directors awarded him nearly $29 million. And the right's all nuts about the bus driver getting some money. It's amazing to me. But here's what Reuters wrote about Mr. Weldon. They wrote, after a year which Johnson & Johnson's product quality was deemed such a shambles that the U.S. government will oversee some plants, the board had praised Chief Executive William Weldon and awarded him almost $29 million in overall compensation. The once golden reputation of the diversified healthcare giant was severely tarnished by seemingly endless recalls of high-profile consumer products, as well as recalls of medical devices and products from other units. U.S. consumer products sales fell more than 19%. And the company's 2011 forecasts for earnings are going to grow only by 1 to 3%, falling shy of Wall Street's predictions. So now, given that grand, that wonderful setup, you know, this grand meritocracy that we live in, how well the stock's doing, sales fell by 19%, not going to meet Wall Street's expectations. Here's $29 million. Thank you. So basically what's going on is you got a guy who busts his behind, working 93 hours a week, earns $159,000. On the other hand, you got a CEO who I guarantee has the smoothest of baby hands and has probably never done an honest day's labor in his work, in his life, given almost $29 million for failure. So where's the meritocracy? So to answer the question how I got the numbers, I based on their income. I calculated the taxes based on current rates and the rates during the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower, back in 1953. I used the Bureau of Labor Statistics inflation calculator to figure out what the income would have been back in 53 and the historical tax brackets of 53 to calculate the percentages and the taxes. And I came across some interesting numbers. Our CEO friend, Mr. Weldon, was given $28.7 million to be precise. And assuming that that money is in stocks and other things that they can shelter, Weldon, and really before the myriad of loopholes and deductions that Weldon can use, he paid about 34.9%, or just over $10 million on the nearly $29 million that he took. So he paid about almost 35%. Now our greedy, budget-busting bus driver, you know, that union guy, that hoarding, selfish slime, he'll pay nearly 24% of his income on that $159,000. Now, understand, he worked 93 hours per week. He's going to pay about $38,000 in taxes. So Republicans keep saying we have this spending problem. Not a revenue problem, it's a spending problem. In fact, they say we're broke. And I say, no, we're not broke. All we need to do is look back to our last great socialist president, Republican Dwight David Eisenhower. You know, Mr. Let's use tax dollars to build an interstate system, you know, that commie. Anyway, back in 1953, the Eisenhower years, Weldon's income would have been, you know, right around $3.5 million. He would have been taxed at almost $3.2 million. That's what he would have paid, 91%. Now, you know, our workaholic bus driver, he would have made about a little over $19,000, paid almost $8,000 of that in taxes, nearly 40%. So nearly 40%. So you go back and you look at the numbers, everybody paid higher taxes, so there was more revenue, which was why we didn't have massive debt. Understand, in 53, the top marginal rate was 92%. It wasn't until Kennedy came in and dropped it down to 70 that we began to see this slide downward. Reagan took power, and boy, it just plummeted from 50 down to 28. And then George H.W. Bush took power and did something really stupid. Took the Tom Corbett, I'm not going to raise taxes. Remember, read my lips. No new taxes. But then he got into power and he said, oh my God, we're going broke. We've got these massive deficits. We can't cut military spending fast enough. So he raised taxes. He lost election. In comes Clinton. He raises taxes up to 39.6%. We have a booming economy. George Shrubu Bush comes in, gives it a big tax handouts. You know the history. Down to 35%, the economy tax. So what do we got? Now you got Republican Dave Camp saying, you know what? 35% is too high. We need to bring it down to 25%. So now think about this. Under Camp's proposal, our CEO friend who makes $28.7 million is going to get a gift of about 10% of his taxes. He's going to pay just about $7.2 million, as were before he was paying over 10. So a nice handout. Mr. Nelson, the guy, the bus driver, he's going to get nothing. He's going to basically pay the same tax rate. So, you know, when you look at this stuff, you go, but we have a spending problem, not a revenue problem. Think of those numbers. And, you know, Jake, I look at this and I go, at some point, when does it enter the thick skulls of some? Like the guy who called last night and said, well, you know, you just don't know, you're laughable. No, we've got an absolute revenue problem.
Well, the problem is that the Republicans have been eminently successful. And I can tell you there's a lot of people in the community I love that are saying, well, you know, school teachers make too much. Why? Because their taxes are going up, but their taxes are not going up. Most people, unfortunately, Rick, are busy with their lives. They don't take the time to really investigate. Obviously, the teachers are not the problem. The problem is the revenue coming from the state. Why is the revenue giving less? For several reasons. The Republicans are in control, and there's less money coming from the federal government because they have great problems. But the average person really doesn't invest. Unfortunately, that doesn't investigate. And when you have, like in this area, in a lot of areas, the media controlled by big business, by the Republicans, by the wealthy, they're going to get their message out. And unfortunately, our message doesn't get out enough. So on a lot of issues, they blame the wrong people. They will look at that bus driver and say, why are my tax dollars paying for him to make all that money? Why don't we privatize it? Well, they don't bother looking at the facts. They don't bother looking at the big picture. They just want to blame somebody. And it's far easier, Rick, to do some investigation and look at a situation which may or may not be complex. It's easy to blame the victim, and many people do, and the Republicans have been evidently successful. And you know that, and I know that, and that's unfortunate.
But I look at this. A guy works 93 hours a week. 93 hours a week. One, I tell him, you got to take a break, brother. You're going to be the richest man in the grave. But, you know, and the other part of this is it came out of a, you know, that Randy Hopper's ad. Where, oh, they have a bus driver makes $159,000. Not telling you that it was 93 hours a week. I don't know very many people who would work 93 hours a week, even to make 159 grand. I honestly don't. But that's a whole nother story. But, you know, I look at this and I go, at some point, we need somebody. You know, where is the populist movement? You know, and this is where I thought that the Tea Party could have been. Right when the Tea Party people popped up, I was going, yeah, this is what we need. We need this populist uprising of people who are saying we have a massive problem with wealth inequity. There are too small a number of people controlling far too much wealth in this country. We need the people who create the wealth, you know, to have some of that. to be able to put back into the economy, to grow the economy. Simple stuff. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What do you think? Where is the populist? And are CEOs worth 300 times more than their workers? Back after this.
I'm taking all your money and shipping it offshore. Do the job you're looking for.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Executive Director of CAIU on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customer service. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
Our workers' comp system is a confusing maze of rules, delays, and loopholes where workers struggle to collect what they are owed. Bills don't get paid, and families struggle to put food on the table after a serious work injury. What happens when you're injured on the job in Pennsylvania? Most people think you just applied for workers' comp and you'll get paid for lost time, and your medical bills will be covered. Sadly, in Pennsylvania, that is not the case. The good news is, it doesn't have to be that way. Hi, I'm Ron Calhoun, and I'm a Central Pennsylvania workers' compensation attorney. It's my job to make sure injured workers receive the benefits they deserve. In the last 20 years, I have helped hundreds of Pennsylvania workers and their families after they've suffered from a work injury. If you've been injured on the job, I'd like the chance to show you how I might be able to do the same for you. Why not find out what you're rightfully owed? Call me at 717-695-4722. You have nothing to lose and much to gain. Call me at 695-4722.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all.
It's class warfare. My class is winning, but they shouldn't be.
A working class hero is something to be.
The taxation system has tilted toward the rich and away from the middle class.
Working class hero is something to be.
You know, I look at this piece by David Francis in the Christian Science Monitor, and he asked the question, are CEOs 300 times more valuable than their lowest paid workers? You know, he goes on to say there's something missing, like I said in the quote last week, last segment, there's something missing in Washington. That populist, and I would say Bernie Sanders is probably that populist, that guy who's out there. I mean, that 8-hour rant that he had on the budget and on how wealth is being distributed, a pretty good move in that direction. But he's it, man. Everybody else seems to be in the pockets of the very wealthy. You look at the phone call that Scott Walker believed he was getting from one of the Koch brothers. Had no problem picking up the phone with him. Do you think you would have a chance of talking to a sitting governor? I don't think so. But, you know, he goes through this, Francis goes through this, this whole argument in his piece, and I think it's worth taking a look at. It's called Where's the Populist Uprising over at the Christian Science Monitor website. He points out the reality is that the rich are getting richer, and those of us who are not super rich, we're actually getting poorer. And he throws out a couple of interesting facts that are irrefutable. I mean, good luck on this. The fact that the richest 1% of this country took 23.5% of all of the nation's income in 2007. Now, you compare that with 1976, where they took under 9%, and you go, okay, how did that happen? Well, that happened because you have, since the late 70s, you have had a concerted assault on workers' rights. You have had this all-out frontal assault on people being able to organize. So you look at gross domestic income in 2007 being $14 trillion. They took almost 24% of that, Jake. They surely filled their pockets. Now, the lowest fifth, you know, the people at the very bottom, the very folks at the bottom of the income ladder, they saw a decrease in income of 4.1%. So their income went down. During the same period, the top 5% in the country, again, you know, this is a lot of percentages, but the, those at the very top, they saw their portion increase 73%. So a whopping amount of money that the top 5% took at the expense of the people at the bottom. A massive shifting of income and wealth up. Now, the top 1%, the top 1% of people in this country own almost 34% of the wealth. That's more than the combined wealth of the bottom 90%. And you want to know about the Forbes 400? You know, our wealthy 400, you know, the people who you could fit into a pretty good sized room? They have as much wealth as 50% of the population. So you're looking at, what, 150 million people? 155 million people, Jake?
About 155.
And I listen to guys, you know, and I've been thinking about the guy who called last night that, you know, oh, you're not getting it, and your ideas are laughable, or whatever he said. You look at these numbers, and how can you not see that we have a massive redistribution of wealth going on in this country, and it's continuing away from people who labor, people who sweat, people who work, to those who do not.
If you listen to his argument, he's bought into the right-wing argument, because what he said to you, Rick, was, compared to other states, Pennsylvania's, what business taxes are higher?
Yeah.
He bought into the right-wing talking points, the right-wing mean.
Now, look, what happens is you can hear what I'm saying, and someone can say, well, you're just jealous. You're just jealous of Bill Gates. I'm not. I want everyone to do very well. I want everyone to lead the solid middle-class lifestyle that I've had at the minimum. I want to see rich people. I want to see people do well. But I want everybody to share in that wealth. And for me, it's about fairness. It's about fairness. What's happened is we've got this free enterprise system that has done this. What's happened is you've got this mass accumulation of wealth into the hands of the few. And it's only been a couple of decades, Jake, that this has happened in.
Well, the irony is, if you remember, history does repeat itself, and it really does. If you remember what happened after the Great Depression, when FDR came into office, what did FDR do? He went to the wealthy. He went to the corporate people and said, look, you better buy into my reforms, because if we don't change things, they're coming after you. Things are so bad out there. We have two countries. We have the wealthy, and we have everyone else poor. And you had massive unemployment, massive poverty, and thank God there were enough of enlightened people, at least they had enough enlightened self-interest among the wealthy and the corporate elite to say, yeah, you know, he's right. And it's getting there. I'm not saying it's there now. I'm not going to be that extreme. But if it keeps going, in time, we will get to the same place that we were after the Great Depression.
Yep. You know, he points out in his article that in the 60s, the CEO was paid about 30 times that of the lowest paid worker. Today it's over 300. You know, I look at the reality. Our CEO friend there, Weldon, almost $29 million. He's okay, but the bus driver who busts his behind, somehow he's a problem. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Preston on line one. How are we doing tonight, Preston?
Hi, Rick. I'm doing well. Thanks. Enjoying the show.
Thank you.
Well, a couple of things. You mentioned Bill Gates. Interestingly, Bill Gates Sr., his dad, has an attitude very much like Warren Buffett's, saying that there is sort of a class war going on, and the wealthiest need to recognize their dependence on working people and other parts of the society, the natural resources and whatnot, the public investment in our university system, the government contracts, and everything else that made the so-called solo uber capitalists, their wealth came into context,
right,
and a lot of contributions were made. And Bill Gates Sr. actually co-wrote a book, I think with Chuck Collins, called Wealth and Our Commonwealth. And he actually worked against the cutting of the so-called death tax.
The estate tax, right.
Yeah.
Because he's never been able to find that family farmer that lost his farm because of the estate tax. And I've always quipped that family farmers riding around with the welfare queen and bin Laden in that mythical Cadillac.
Right, right. Also, I wanted to mention a couple other progressive politicians who are out there. You mentioned Sanders. There's also Dennis Kucinich.
Yeah, who I handed out flyers for him when he was mayor of Cleveland. So I love Dennis. He's a good guy.
Great.
Kind of strange, but still a good guy.
Yeah. I guess we all have our quirks. Yep. I don't know. I heard him recently on another radio show, a progressive talk show, and he was talking about issues they had with the nuclear plant in Ohio. You know, a lot of people are pointing to, like, Three Mile Island and Chernobyl as, oh, it's so rare that we have a problem. But the reality is we've had problems with these things all over the world. Simi Valley in the 70s, and there's Indian Point, I think, in New York, and Hanford. A lot of these places have had multiple accidents. Huge expense, and it's a shame. There's money available for these huge state-run, state-subsidized boondoggles that threaten our lives, but somehow there's never money for the stuff of social uplift that Martin Luther King said we should be investing in, you know, the health care, the education, the saving wild spaces, mass transit for people, rec centers, libraries, on and on, elder care. So there's definitely, I didn't hear your right-wing caller the other day, but I hope they keep calling in because, you know, he's been subjected to years of corporate propaganda put out by, you know, PR agents of big business like Rush Limbaugh and Hannity, and they're very tricky in their words. They study rhetoric. And,
well, I think Frank Luntz is an absolute genius. Man. I think death tax is amazing. It's all in the linguistics.
Yeah. One other progressive I wanted to mention, or I don't know about her past, how progressive she's been, but some people are becoming more progressive. And I heard Jan Schakowsky.
Love Jan Schakowsky.
Okay, right on. Well, she's introducing a something like the Fairness and Tax Act. Okay.
Yep, 45% on anything over $1 million, 46 over $10 million, and it goes up from there, which I think a very smart policy. Never going to see the light of day, though.
Yeah. But maybe the act of doing it will, you know.
Will wake people up.
Exactly, educate people. I'll contact my reps about it. We have a couple good liberal representatives here in Colorado, Diana DeGette, and, you know, Hickenlooper, our new governor, is. He's a mixed bag.
Yeah. I know all about it. Preston, I got to take a hard break right here. I appreciate the call. Feel free to call back anytime, brother.
I'll do that, man. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
We're right back after this with Sally Cohen. Stick around.
Thank you. Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Thousands of workers and their supporters sent a message to the Republican government of Michigan on Wednesday. Jeff Russell reports.
Thousands descended on the capital of Michigan Wednesday to express their concerns over legislation that would grant the state the power to appoint emergency financial managers who could strip teachers and workers of collective bargaining rights. The taxpayers were also concerned about a budget that provides $1.8 billion in tax cuts to business, while making up for those cuts on the backs of low-income workers. Michigan Nurses Association President Jeff Breslin.
It's a personal insult to nurses and to everybody here to watch as our state government deliberately and maliciously propose laws that leave deep, bleeding cuts in our patients, our families, and our communities' lives.
Jerry Alpizer is a small business owner from Traverse City, Michigan, and he wants to know where his tax break is.
And I call myself among you because I don't get tax breaks. If I don't make money, I don't get a bailout. This trickle-down crap is over.
State Senator Coleman Young Jr., son of Detroit's first African-American mayor, told the crowd that it was time to draw a line in the sand.
And we rise with one voice and say, you will not take our rights, you will not take our liberties, and we will not let this day give us liberty or give us death.
American Postal Workers Union members will soon be voting on a tentative contract agreement that was reached this week. APWU President Cliff Guffey says it provides a 3.5% pay raise over the course of the contract, protects retirement and health care benefits, and safeguards jobs. And Guffey says it underscores that public worker collective bargaining works.
With workers across the country fighting to defend their right to collective bargaining, our tentative agreement is a testament to the value of a great American freedom, the right of workers to have a voice at work and to negotiate for a better life. We are grateful that we continue to enjoy this right, and we stand in solidarity with workers across the country who are fighting to keep it for themselves.
U.S. Representative Jan Schakowsky has heard the call of workers in protests nationwide that in order to really fix government deficits, the rich have to pay their fair share. Schakowsky has introduced a Fairness in Taxation Act in Congress. It creates a new tax bracket for income $1 million a year and above, and would also tax capital gains and dividends as ordinary income for those making $1 million a year or more. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a don't you know?
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
While they're standing in the world of their lives, crying at the doorsteps of the armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment line.
All right, welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Over check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. A listener sent me an article from foxnews.com, and I got to be honest, generally I don't spend an awful lot of time over at fake news on Fox's site, but this article caught my eye. It was titled "Watching Uproar Over Wisconsin Protests: It's Time to Remember How Unions Make Our Lives Better." And I said, on fake news on Fox's website, really? I've got to talk to the person who wrote this, and that's why I've asked Sally Kahn. She's a community organizer and political commentator to come on and talk to us. Also the founder and chief education officer of the Movement Vision Lab. Sally, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, I'm honored to be on. Thanks for everything you do for your area.
I guess first, how'd you get on the Fox site?
Boy, it's not where I expected to be either, but, you know, since leaving the on-the-ground organizing about a year ago and deciding that, you know, more of us needed to be fighting the battles for hearts and minds, not just in backyards and living rooms, but on the airwaves, I have actually found the folks at Fox to be surprisingly receptive. So I do some on-air stuff with them, and from time to time they let me write and they don't edit it.
Wow.
There you have it.
Excellent. Because I do believe that we do need to have more voices out there, which is why we started this program, to try and add a little bit of balance, because I think so many people are inundated by the pro-business agenda, if you will. That you get working people who are siding with the CEOs in that, yeah, we need a guy like William Weldon, CEO of Johnson & Johnson, take almost $29 million, yet we're going to persecute a guy who worked 93 hours a week and made $159,000 as a bus driver.
Yeah, it's driving me crazy. I mean, look, Rick, the thing that got me, the most recent bee in my bonnet is that, proceeds or revenues for the top, five banks on Wall Street, the top big five banks, JP Morgan, Bank of America, et cetera, that crowd. The profits were actually down the last year. As a share, their bonuses are going to go up. I mean, I'm sorry, what bad economy? Oh yeah, right, the economy that they ruined. You know, it's a sad kind of, please, sir, can we have some more abuse model when we just keep going back to big business and to this right-wing economics and saying, no, please make the economy worse for working people because someday we think that we might be one of those, 400 people who own all of the wealth, of the same amount of wealth as the 115 million combined.
You know, I look at this, and you point out almost $90 billion in bonuses for the top executives at these big banks. And I say, we're not broke. I keep hearing the Republicans telling me we're broke. We can't fund education. We can't get health care to children. We can't help granny. Sorry, we got to cut Social Security. I'm looking at $90 billion, billion with a B, to the top five banks. We're not broke.
No, we're not broke. And this is like an old-fashioned hat trick that they're trying to pull. This is the 20 years ago, the right said, look, our plan, we hate government. We hate anything that stands in the way of unlimited profits. Our plan is to, as they said, starve the beast. We cut taxes and we cut revenue into government. And then you kind of have this situation where you can turn to the American people and say, we're out of money. We're going to have to start cutting programs. We're going to have to start cutting benefits for poor people and for working families. It's a problem that they literally created. I mean, the best example is in Wisconsin, actually, where, the plan that Scott Walker tried to pass off as a budget fix by cutting the rights of workers, of public workers, was going to, quote-unquote, save, by hurting workers, a total of $300 million over 2 years. Meanwhile, 60% of businesses in Wisconsin that earn over $1 million a year in revenue. 60% of big businesses in Wisconsin pay zero tax, zero.
Well, they're working their way up to Pennsylvania, where three quarters pay
nothing. That, if they just raise that to the national average, not talking high taxes, talking national average for business taxes, they would raise $1 billion a year in revenue. I mean, come on, it's a revenue problem. It is not spending problem.
And that's what I've been saying. It is absolutely a revenue problem. In fact, I went back and I talked about the good tax, the tax code of the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower, where the top marginal rate was 92%. And I compared the bus driver from Madison who worked 93 hours a week and made almost $160,000 and our CEO, Mr. Weldon, who is basically driving Johnson & Johnson into the ground, but was bestowed almost $29 million and kind of talked about, where that took us. We have given Mr. Weldon huge amounts of money, but the guys working for a living, they're the ones getting screwed here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, come on, look, we're talking under Reagan, taxes were, something around 60%. I mean, under every Republican president, with, of course, the exception of Bush, they were higher. When we're talking about now, God, the GOP wants to cut the top marginal tax rate down to 25%.
Yep, Representative Camp.
That's insane. And it's in this economy, at all of all moments, that the people who are faring the worst who disproportionately rely on government and on public services to get by, like unemployment and things like that. We're gonna put the hurt on them, and we're gonna give more money to the people who are doing well. This is, the problem with this line of thinking, of course, is that you ask conservatives, what do you think you should do in a good economy? And they say, cut taxes. And you say, what do you think you should do in a bad economy? And they say, cut taxes. It can't be a one-size-fits-all solution. Sometimes you need government spending.
But, Sally, we need shared sacrifice. Times are tough. We need to tighten our belts.
That's right. Those who have bigger belts can tighten them more. You know, this isn't that complicated, you know? I mean, it really is a matter of where are we going to put the pain? Are you going to cut? There's been some great comparisons looking at, I'll try and pull them up while we're talking, but, you know, literally you're talking about robbing Paul to pay Peter. I mean, you can cut heating oil subsidies for low-income people who are struggling just to stay in their homes. Or you can, give more subsidies to oil drilling companies. I mean, come on, where are you going to put that money?
Look, the oil drilling companies need the money. They create the jobs. They're the job creators. See, you gotta give money to the job creators. Gotta keep those creators making greater jobs.
Yeah, that's malarkey, Rick. You know it. Look, first of all, big business right now, for the last 10 years, has been sitting on billions of dollars in unspent capital.
Yeah, all money of ours that we've given them.
It's a hat trick. You know, they say, oh, well, we're going to grow profits. We're going to cut expenses. By the way, that's just language for we're going to, screw over workers and cut jobs and cut benefits and grow our profits and meanwhile sit on excess capital and pay higher dividends. And then we're going to say, oh, boo-hoo-hoo, the economy is bad and we need tax breaks. I mean, come on. You know, this is like they're robbing us. They're cheating the system. They're cheating working families. And then they have the audacity to say to us, well, we're doing it for your own good because we care about you.
Oh, yeah. We want to save Social Security. That's one of my other favorite ones. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Sally Cohn. She's written a great piece. And if you want to read it, just go to TheRickSmithShow.com. Click on her name. It'll take you to the Fox News site. Also, you can join her Facebook page. Just click on the FB next to her name. It'll take you right there. Lots of interesting stuff over at the Movement Vision Lab as well. I look at this and maybe you have an answer, because I'm trying to figure out when it happened that we put corporations on a pedestal, that we started to believe in this idea of a benevolent corporation that was, that they were in charge of making society better and that they would always do the right thing for society and that they could police themselves, if you will. We didn't need people watching them. They would do it themselves because they're good, honorable folks.
And look, I mean, let's be clear. I am not anti-capitalism. I believe in the free market. I believe in the free market when it works well. And I believe in the free market when it works in the spirit in which it was created in this country, which is to work for everyone and to give everyone a shot at the American dream. I do not believe in the quote-unquote free market, which is really just a set of tripwires and a rigged game that helps those that are already at the top get even further to the top. You know, you're exactly right, Rick. What happened was in the 30s and 40s, after the robber baron era, right, there was this era in our country of extraordinary inequality.
Much like today.
That is being unfortunately replicated in the same proportion today. After that period, there was a recession, as we all know, and government stepped in, and government did good. It made good in people's lives. It fixed the economy. It did what government is supposed to do. It created prosperity and opportunity for all. And big business was scared. They didn't like that all of a sudden, they were making more equitable wages to workers were more equitable in comparison to executives. They didn't like the strictures of labor relations and things that have been put on them, let alone, public benefits and all these programs. And they just didn't like the general sort of pro-collective, pro-government, tenor that the country was moving in. And they very explicitly in the 50s and in the early 60s set about the Chamber of Commerce and then other groups set about and said, and their predecessors, we got to do something about this. We have to indoctrinate. We have to get into schools and indoctrinate college kids. We have to get into the media. We have to create think tanks. We have to fund candidates. We have to do all of these things to tell Americans that, in fact, you know, what is good for business is good for America, right? What's good for, you know, I mean, this is where all the marketing came out of Detroit, right?
Yep. If it's good for GM, it's good for the country.
It's good for GM, it's good for America.
Yep.
You know, they were remarkably successful. That, compared with some very key Supreme Court victories, obviously the most recent being Citizens United, but even before that, that allowed unlimited campaign cash to come in through private corporations. They literally bought off the opposition. And add to that the fact that they control most of the media, and literally, who's going to say otherwise? Who's going to speak up otherwise, except for brave people like you?
Well, I don't know if you saw it, but it looks like Citadel is being bought out by Cumulus, so number two is buying number three, so the media just got a whole lot smaller.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's really, and of course, look what's happening now with NPR. I mean, we literally have only, or predominantly, corporate-controlled media in this country, and again, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing with, you know, free enterprise and the free market. The problem is it's literally the only option, especially in a realm as important as, you know, media, free speech, and holding, using media and using journalism as it should be to hold all sectors of our society accountable, which includes corporations. You can't be your own watchdog.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in favor of the free market system, as you are, but I'm against the cancer stage, which I think we're living in right now, which is the monopolistic stage, which is where the big fish, which always eats the little fish, is free to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, that is not the free market. That is, it's just, you know, literally, it's so funny because the images, when we talk about the marketplace, you know, we aren't picturing Walmart, you know. We're not picturing one behemoth giant that controls everything. I mean, we really mean an environment in which all of us are able to contribute our ideas, our talent, our energy, and when literally, you know, people who work hard, I mean, you know what kills me? I'm an organizer. I spend a lot of time talking to hardworking folks around this country. And, you know, 40 years ago, average worker, you know, earned about 40 times less than average CEO. So at the inverse, the average CEO earned about 40 times more than the lowest paid worker in a company. Now it's about 500 times more. I have yet to meet a single person. Frankly, I've yet to meet a lot of, you know, management level people either who can say that they really think those CEOs work 500 times harder.
Well, they're just that much
smarter.
And
the folks on factory floors, the folks cleaning the toilets. I mean, come on.
They're just, they've got bigger brains, Sally. They're smarter. We need to attract the best talent. Didn't you know that? I got about 30 seconds left. When you see what's going on in Wisconsin, 30 seconds, is this how we're going to get out of this? Is this how we're going to maybe turn people around?
You know, look, protest is a good start, right? And people are coming up and they're saying they're angry. The next thing is to, you know, poke some holes in reality, say that this is a spending problem. This isn't a spending problem, it's a revenue problem. We have to raise taxes, talk about that, and come up with real alternative solutions for how to make the economy more fair and organize behind those.
Yep, I'm right there with you. Sally Cohn, I appreciate your time. I'd love to have you back again real soon. Great conversation.
Thanks, Rick.
Again, you can go to thericksmithshow.com, click on Sally's name, take you to her article, which I think is worth the read. Also right next to it, FB for the Facebook. Go over there and friend her. That'd be a nice thing to do. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
PSECU, we know those holiday bills can really pile up and hit you with double-digit interest rates or fees that start to snowball. Next thing you know, you're buried in a mountain of debt. Dig out by using our 3.9 annual percentage rate Visa balance transfer. Good through December 31st, 2012. That's a really big deal. And you heard that right. Our really big deal, 3.9% APR, is good through December 31st, 2012, and we don't charge you a balance transfer fee. So if you used any other credit card to pay for your holiday purchases, move those high interest rate balances to your PSECU Visa. The sooner you get in on this really big deal, the more you'll save. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pscc.com/life. Get in on our really big deal Visa balance transfer. Don't wait. Start saving.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can go right there, download our podcast, which is there for your entertainment, your enjoyment, also your convenience. If you want to drop me a line, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally, and occasionally I use one on the program. Our Borowitz report. It's been a while since Andy Borowitz has come out with a Borowitz report, but here it is. With unprecedented crisis engulfing the world, millions of television viewers are finding the news too stressful to watch and are turning to Fox News instead. Things are so bad in the world right now. So many people are afraid to watch the news, said psychologist David Lodson, who studies the relationship between news consumption and stress at the University of Minnesota. He goes on to say, for them, Fox News represents a welcome break from reality. Tracy Klugland, 37, a systems analyst from Lansing, Michigan, said that he was flipping the channels one day to find anything but news and found himself watching Fox for the very first time. They had this guy on, Klugland said, something Beck, I think his name was, and he was just going on and on, making stuff up. I was like, this is the kind of mindless junk I need right now. Mr. Klugland says he now records the program and watches it every day when he gets home from work. For 1 hour, he said, at least I know I can kick back and not hear anything that's going on in the world. He said that watching Fox has also introduced him to my favorite new comedian, this hysterical woman named Michelle Bachmann. He goes on to say, he says, she was doing this bit about how the American Revolution started in New Hampshire, you know, not Massachusetts. And then she started mixing up where Lexington and Concord were. He said, you know, okay, I know it sounds really stupid, but I almost peed myself. Elsewhere, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker said he was not worried how history would remember him because if he has his way, there won't be any history teachers to teach them. And that is the Borowitz report. I hope
Andy is kidding on that one.
Well, I mean, you look at the massive amount of budget cuts you're talking about coming from education. Just like here in Pennsylvania, they've got a governor in Wisconsin and Michigan and Florida and you name the state, they're slashing education funding. Mm-hmm. So basically, if you slash education funding, what are you going to get? You're going to get people who are not going to go into the profession, and it's going to suffer. Simple stuff. Anyway, yesterday we talked with Michigan AFL-CIO President Mark Gaffney about the thousands of protesters that showed up in Lansing, Michigan at their capital to protest their governor, Rick Snyder's constitutionally flawed assault on Michigan workers. And, you know, you look at the reality. In Michigan, it's really easy to recall someone. Almost, I think it's going to be 3 months that they can recall this guy. The state house and the state minority leaders have already called for a state constitutional amendment protecting collective bargaining rights. Michigan voters are going to, be able to bypass the legislature altogether and call for this constitutional amendment and referendum. But I guess it's pretty easy. I guess you only need like 10% of the people. So interestingly enough, more folks in the street. And I think that is something that we absolutely need, Jake, something that I think is a good thing.
Well, if I've heard correctly, Rick, correct me if I'm wrong, the history of that is in the early part of the last century, the 20th century, the progressives around the country were afraid that the scenario that is happening right now would occur. And so to prevent it from happening and have an alternative for the electorate to get people out who are totally an anesthesis to the welfare of the state, they put these provisions in, and here we are almost 100 years later. I think I find that pretty ironic. But the very thing that they feared is happening today, 100 years later.
Well, leave it to a Republican to come up with that. But that's interesting. And we're seeing the recall efforts going on in Wisconsin. A little bit later on in the program, we're going to talk with Nick Milroy, a state representative from Wisconsin, about how things are going there. I think it's going to be an interesting couple of months. Ohio, they're talking about some ballot initiatives or some referendums coming out to correct collective bargaining. A lot of voter interaction. I'm kind of interested to see how this is going to work out. Anyway, let's take a quick break. I want to get to our next guest to talk about the rally, people getting out to the streets, kids, college kids going, you know what, Governor Corbett, please, leave me alone. We're right back after this.
Proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
Every state legislature has its share of incompetent, insensitive, and often incomprehensible goobers sitting in seats of power. Sometimes you have to wonder who helps them work the doorknobs to get out of their houses each morning. For some reason, Texas seems to have more than its share of grade-A goobers serving in our state capital. One is Debbie Riddle, a right-wing Republican ideologue from the town of Tomball. Representative Riddle is presently in a pout. She's offended that so many people have been offended by an immigration bill she introduced. It calls for fining and jailing people who, quote, intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly hire undocumented immigrants. Okay, that's a pretty popular position in our state, but then she stumbled and tumbled by adding a little exemption. People who hire unauthorized laborers to work in their homes will not be fined or jailed. Yes, it's a nanny loophole for the privileged class. They rail about people they callously brand as illegal aliens. Yet, they want a steady supply of these low-wage powerless workers to care for their children, clean their houses, and tend their yards. They don't want to mess with checking documents, so Debbie blithely gives them a pass, allowing them to hate illegals and have them, too. How happy! She then demonstrated her deep grasp of the immigration issue by explaining that Latinos are coming into our state illegally because we put, quote, a big old bowl of candy out for them. Yeah, Madam Lawmaker, those housekeeping and yard jobs, as well as chicken plucking and roofing jobs, are plenty cushy and well-paying, which is why so many of your neighbors are scrambling to grab such work for themselves. This is Jim Hightower saying, pious politicos should try walking in the shoes of people they denigrate before they legislate. Reality can be a useful teacher if you're willing to listen to reality.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out. HightowerLowdown.com.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
St. Petty's Day. I love the green. It takes me back to my days when I lived in Cleveland. We used to go down to the St. Patrick's Day Parade and drink green beer and throw up green stuff in the streets.
The old green beer.
It was all of ninth grade. Boy, I'm sure glad that Tom Corbett's going to take us down that path. Privatize those liquor stores. Yes, sir. So that our kids can have that as well. Amazing stuff. Today, you know, I've been waiting for this. College kids out in the streets saying, you know, Corbett, not happy with your budget, not happy with the massive cuts in education. Here to talk to us about that event is Vice President of the Kutztown Chapter of APSCUF, the Association of Pennsylvania State College and University Faculties, and also a professor there at Kutztown University, Kevin Mahoney. Kevin, happy St. Patty's Day, my friend.
Yeah, Kevin Thomas, Patrick Mahoney here. And I'll tell you, I love your music intro. That was my soundtrack of my commute to work this morning.
There you go. Like I was saying, I remember the good old days of St. Patrick's Day in Cleveland with the big parades and the green beer and the vomiting. That's what I remember.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I grew up, I was like the only Irish kid in the block. I grew up in an Italian neighborhood. For my 12th birthday, I actually got an Italian horn from one of my friends telling me, we know on the inside you're really Italian. They couldn't shake the Irish out of me, though, I'll tell you that.
There you go. Let's talk about what happened today. And I think this is a great, great thing that you guys have done out there at Kutztown, getting college students out into the streets saying, hey, you know what? This is our future that you're stealing, Mr. Governor.
That's right. I mean, that's exactly what we're talking about. I mean, one of the things when I talked about today was, you know, we've seen a state that has been decimated by these free marketeers. We've watched secure jobs, what have been the backbone of this state's economy, be shipped offshore. And at the same time, we get promises that, you know, down the road, don't worry, you'll get yours. Just work hard, study and work hard. And what we've got is a state system of higher education, which is really like the last promise to the citizens of Pennsylvania that they've got a shot. And they want to auction that off. They want to auction that off to the natural gas companies. They want to auction that off to some kind of private industries. This is like a last stand in my mind. I mean, what they're after here is a fundamental change into the common part of our Commonwealth.
I absolutely agree with you, but, you know, it said you had like 150, 200 people out there today.
Yep.
I'm curious why you didn't have a couple thousand people and why across the state. When are we going to see this? Because this affects every one of those kids right now.
That's right.
And the high school seniors who are coming up and the families. And this is a massive, a 54% cut. 54%.
That's right. This is it's pretty incredible. And, you know, The pessimist in me gets really upset when I see this. But when I see this, what I recognize is like, look, sometimes people are slow to get started, right? And so you just need to kind of move it forward step by step until you build that movement. So we had 150, 200 students out there today. We've got a couple buses going on the 28th out to Harrisburg for APSCUF's Lobby Day. The Student Government Association of Kutztown has four buses going out on April 5th or April 6th for a kind of PASHI-wide protest. So when I look at this as an opportunity to organize, but you know, it's been surprising to see how slow this thing has been to start. From my brothers and sisters in the labor movement, I've had some arguments with some of them, but saying like, look, what we're seeing here is like we're seeing kind of Wisconsin version 2.0.
Yep.
And I said, you know, Corbett, you know, people want to call Corbett an idiot. They want to say that, you know, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. I think this guy knows exactly what he's doing.
Well, I absolutely. And what I've been saying for the longest time is, you know, he may look like your grandfather and he may look less extreme than the guy in Wisconsin or Ohio, but he's no less deadly.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, I listened to a lot of your shows when you're out in Wisconsin, and I was sitting there, you know, and like doing that reporting, interviewing folks that are on the ground there, seeing the connection to senators, the Wisconsin 14, seeing what people were doing on the ground there and saying, look, this is what I'm holding up, is this is the example, right? If you want to know what is going to change things, this is it. right? I don't have the confidence in our elected officials. You know, good, I'm going to do my letter writing campaign. I'm going to do my lobbying. But I don't have the confidence in our elected officials to do the right thing unless they see thousands and thousands and thousands of people behind them, let them know that either you do the right thing or you're gone.
Yep. And you know, that radical self-interest thing works.
That's right.
You know, and the reason we went to Wisconsin, quite frankly, was one, to be part of history, but two, to see how it's done, because
right.
I do believe that that's what's going to have to happen. People are going to have to take to the streets. And to be honest, Kevin, I was hopeful when the Tea Party started. I really thought, could this be that moment where people come out, are organized, angry and frustrated and willing to do something? And
yep.
then they took this bizarre turn off to, we love corporations and we love profit. I'm still reeling from that.
Well, you know, it shows you exactly what happens. I mean, this is, the Tea Party is a great example of what we see when you say, when we're talking about the effect of corporate money, right, and private financiers. It's like, I believe that there were a lot of people that first got involved in the Tea Party because they, you know, they're looking at their taxes, they're looking at what they're getting, they're looking at their lives disappearing around them, right, and they're seeing these, you know, these bankers, right, who are getting off scot-free. As a matter of fact, their own tax dollars are going to bail them out. And so they look at them, and they're looking for an answer to say, no way. And then you got these guys, these opportunists who come in, millions and millions of dollars through their front organizations, and they kind of they take it over, and they push it in their direction. And now you've got people, you know, I had some students come up to me today after this rally. And, you know, this one woman in particular, I think she was a sophomore or junior, and she's sitting there. She's got, like, rage and tears in her eyes, you know. And she's telling me, she's like, I voted for Corbett because he told me that he was going to make education more affordable. Right? And I look at her and I say, that's who we're talking about. Those were the people that were taken advantage of by that movement. Right? And pushed them in that direction. And now they're watching that everything that they did sold out again.
Yeah. And it's a frustrating thing. But I gotta be honest, to rebut what she had to say, I don't remember him saying he was going to make education more affordable.
I didn't either. But you know what? At that moment, I wasn't getting into it.
I do remember him saying he was going to do everything in his power to make business, Pennsylvania, a business-friendly state, and to help business move ahead, even if it meant you or I. You're listening to The Rick Show. We're with Kevin Mahoney here on St. Paddy's Day. He's the vice president of the Kutztown chapter of APSCUF, the Association of Pennsylvania State College and University Faculty. He's also an associate professor there. Got a nice blog where he's writing, KUExchange.wordpress.com. You can go to TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Kevin Mahoney's name. Take you right there. Some interesting articles. You know, in moving forward, this is, you know, they keep telling us we have a knowledge economy. We have this a need for higher education. And what I think's happening, and this is by design, I do believe, that they're making it almost that the working class of this country can't attain that
That's
next
right.
level of job to pull themselves out of poverty, really creating a two-class system in this country.
That's absolutely right. And if you look at, I mean, you know, again, it's funny. You start talking to people initially, and they think you're being alarmist. They think you're being extreme. You think you're being some conspirator. And then they're watching stuff that's going on. Right, and they're seeing it little by little. Our own kids can't make it to college anymore. You know, when my students in my classes had first heard that they're facing a 33% tuition increase next year, right? If that just to cover the cost at Kutztown, right? Actually, Kutztown. No, I should correct that. Kutztown is going to be a little bit lower. It'll only be 32%. And they're seeing that, and you see it on their faces. You know, you see it that this is it. You know, these are students who are paying out of their pocket. This is not like rich mommy and daddy paying their way through school. These are working kids. They pay their way through school. They work incredibly hard. In most cases, they're first-generation college kids. I mean, these are the kids, right, that are coming to our state system, that this state system was designed to assist and designed to connect to and designed to provide access to. You eliminate that state system, you got exactly what you just said. You got these folks who are going to go to community college, they're going to get job training for the low end of stuff, and you got the few privileged kids that are going to keep on going to UPenn, they're going to keep on going to Penn State, they're going to get their great kind of education, and then they're going to go off and get those knowledge economy jobs where everyone else services them. That's not the world that we promised, and so that's certainly not the America I know.
Well, here's what frightens me, Kevin. We're seeing reports, and I've seen the private education numbers.
Yep.
The CEO of Strayer, Mr. Silberman, tens of millions of dollars in compensation per year. The guy who runs University of Phoenix, same boat. What it seems to me is that we're going to starve public universities for the people of the state in favor of these private institutions are solely for profit. And I do believe that not only will education suffer, but we're going to get fleeced for it as well.
No, that's right. And I think, you know, and just to kind of what you're talking about there, I think everybody listening to your show right now needs to go out and pick up a copy of Naomi Klein's Shock Doctrine and carry it around with them. And if it takes them a day and a half to get through the chapter, then so be it. Right? What she argues in there, she tracks what happened since the 1970s. It's come out of this neoliberal economist stuff, this Milton Friedman folks in the economy that believed that it's going to take He was frustrated with the pace of change towards this quote-unquote free market. So what he started finding out was that what you do is you exploit natural disasters, like, for example, or man-made ones like we're seeing in Japan right now. And what you do is you exploit it, and then people are going to be so terrified and so afraid that they're going to run to anybody that can help. And if you've stripped the public services and stripped public funds away from public services, then the only people left to help are the corporations, and they will embrace privatization. That was his thesis, and they did it in Chile. They've done all around the world. And then most recently, some of these folks have been saying, hey, you know what? We can create a crisis.
Yep.
Right? So what we do, and they've been doing this, you look at it, you gradually defund, and then you wait for a moment like this one when we have an economic downturn, an economic collapse, and then you use that opportunity to justify your move to privatize everything.
Yeah,
you know what that means.
Absolutely. You know, I think Grover Norquist said it best. I got the clip right here for you.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
Yeah, that's it, right there.
I mean, right there. I mean, that's the game plan. But here's the problem, Kevin, and the reason we need to destroy public education on every level is you're too smart for your own good.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's the problem, right?
And I think, as George Carlin said, we need what the wealth class wants are people who are just smart enough to do the jobs and run the machines, but not smart enough to ask why they're getting the screws.
That's right, and you keep them just on edge enough where they're afraid to ask the questions.
So now going forward here, because this is the future of these kids, this is these kids' future.
Yep.
What do we do? Where does this take us from here forward?
Well, I'm telling you, this is the kind of thing that we're seeing. We've gotten our networks through all the other posse systems, and we've got people like me on all the different campuses that are trying to do the same thing that we are. And I think that it's going to take, you know, I would like to say that our public sector unions, even the leadership of my own state union, is going to get out there and lead the charge, right? But, you know, again, I'm not one that's going to sit around there and wait and hope. So I think that what we need to be doing is, like, that's number one, contact every single legislator you've got. Go and sit in their office as it takes place if you can. Shut them down if you can, right? But in the meantime, you start organizing. You start your little protest. Use your little protest to get names and numbers, have them to bring friends. And pretty soon we're going to have to be heading out every single day out in Harrisburg until we shut that place down. Until Harrisburg starts to look like Madison, I'm afraid that we're going to be in some serious trouble.
I'm right there with you. And one of my biggest fears, and I've heard this, and I hope it doesn't happen, but I've heard these cuts could cause one of the state institutions to close. I think that would be a horrible loss for the students of this state and the future of this state.
Well, and you know something with that, too. It's not just the access to education, right? You got to remember, a lot of these state systems, where they were put, right, and the kind of the history of them, they were teachers' colleges to serve the immediate region, right? And a lot of them are in areas, right, that the mines are gone. The steel mills are gone, right? So these universities are not only just providing education for students, they're the number one employer in the area.
Yeah, I look at Bloomsburg.
That's right. You look at Bloomsburg, you look at Mansfield, you look at Lockhaven. That's right.
Amazing stuff. But we want to be here with you. So as this moves forward, please remember us. Come back, tell us what's going on, and we'd like to be help be the center of this.
Hey, you know what? I'll tell you what. We're going to be out there in Harrisburg with you guys. We'll be there on the 28th. Right? ABSCOP is going to have a lobbying day. We've got at least one or two buses coming from Kutztown. I know there's folks that are coming from around the state system, too, as well. Love to hook up with you there. I'll be plugging you every chance I get on my blog and kind of get folks listening to you guys, because I think they need to hear what you've got to say, too, as well.
All right, Kevin. I appreciate it. And again, happy St. Paddy's Day.
Happy St. Paddy's Day to you, Rick.
Have a green one.
Yeah, you too.
We're going to take a quick break. Back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Hey, 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 hey. Watching a thousand unions again, they are all tired.
Exploring the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy!
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Lots there to see and do. And if you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast, which is there for your convenience, your entertainment, enjoyment. You know, while we were in Wisconsin, we often heard the chant, this is what democracy looks like. Citizens going to their government to address their problems, pulling together to solve problems. This is, in my opinion, and I wish Scott Walker would have taken a look at that and watched the democratic process that was thousands of people living in a confined space peacefully. You know, they set up areas for medical care. They set up areas for child care. They set up areas for food. They, through the democratic process, said, you know what, we need child care. People are bringing their kids. They're going to want to, you know, go do something. We need to set that up. And as a society, you know, a little microcosm, if you will, they did that. And I wish Republicans would have seen that because I think it's important. The question then becomes, how do the Republicans view our society? If what I described, citizens deciding what they need, figuring out how to solve their problems, if that's what democracy looks like, what does Republican democracy look like? And I look to this story that the RNC, the Republican National Committee, who's basically broke, they got about a $23 million debt. They're in search of ways to, you know, to fill that debt. And they've got this guy from Wisconsin, Reince Priebus. He's the newly elected chairman. He had this really interesting idea on how you can, you know, how you can solve this. And I gotta be honest, it would look pretty funny if the Fiscal Responsibility Party filed bankruptcy. I think that would be kind of funny, wouldn't it? I do. So what's a bankrupt party to do? Priebus evidently is considering selling off the broadcast rights to RNC debate. So when the presidential candidates have debates, they're going to want to get paid for that. So, you know, I look at this and I go, is that what democracy looks like in the conservative world? that from now on, in order to see the people who are going to be our elected officials, we have to pay them. Does that make sense to you, Jake?
No, it doesn't. Well, I mean, there's various reasons why they've gone broke. I mean, and look at some of the organizations that have been raising money.
They've spent too much money.
Well, under the man who just resigned, there were some questionable bills for some questionable parties.
Well, you know the sex dancer parties. You know, sometimes you just got to blow off a little steam. And you know, when you love your country that much and you work that hard, you should be able to go and, you know, blow off a little steam, if you will. Anyway, but this raises some interesting questions. I mean, copyrights, for instance. Will we be able to play the dumb things that they say during these debates? Or will that be private property? Will we be able to put those on YouTube, or will that be pulled off because it's proprietary? I guess, maybe an idea of, maybe we should just have, like, American Idiot. You know, a series of, you know, just listening to politicians get up there and do their song and dance. Or maybe dancing with the candidates. You know, maybe somebody would pay attention then. I'm not sure. But, you know, you look at the realities, and this is, I got to wonder how Fox News is going to take this. Because if you remember during the 2010 election, it was reported that they gave away $55 million in free airtime to Republicans. And not to mention that News Corp, the people who own Fox, they handed millions of dollars to the Republican Governors Association. So you got to kind of wonder exactly how are they gonna take it? Interesting stuff. I gotta be honest. I am just amazed at the gall of the Republican Party. That this, I'm just amazed. It's beautiful stuff. Another guy who amazes me is this Governor Paul LePage, who, you know, Kasich and Walker and Snyder and Scott, they get all the press. So, you know, if you're an insane governor from a small state way up in the corner of the country, you got to do something, get yourself a little attention, right? Got to do a little bit of something to get yourself a little attention. Well, I think, which is why I guess, you know, he gave this great big speech, and I watched most of it, where he was talking to a bunch of other Catholic folks, joking about how he spent all his time in the confessional and, you know, how he would memorize all these sins so he could get in and out quickly and blah, 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 blah. But then he goes into this whole story about how he used to hide in a corner in an alley and wait for kids to come by and beat them up and steal their candy. And he goes, oh, that's awful, isn't it? And now I'm governor of Maine. Here's the thing. You know, that's kind of a funny ha-ha thing. Yeah. You stole other kids' candy. Yeah, you were a bully even back then. But that's what he's doing to the entire state now. Stealing health care. Stealing education. It's no longer about candy. This guy was a bully from day one. And the state of Maine elected a bully, and are we surprised? Are we surprised that this is what we get? And we got bullies all across the country.
The sad part about it is, I mean, you look at some of the worst states. One of them is Maine, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. Those are states that have had proud traditions of from time to time, progressive leaders in their state. And in one fell swoop, in one election, when the American people pretty much were either angry or turned off. Maybe we've learned a valuable lesson that every election, Rick, every election is important. And now we see the mess we've put our nation through.
How many people have been following Charlie Sheen? There you go. Raise your hand, Jake. There you go. Turns out he's actually winning. You know, I thought that whole winning, duh, thing was kind of dumb. But evidently he is winning when matched up against Sarah Palin.
Actually, Charlie's intellectual capabilities, I believe, are superior to her.
Absolutely.
He actually speaks well. Now, whether he speaks the truth is another matter.
Who cares? He's fun to watch.
He's speaking his version of the truth.
Yeah, but the public policy polling people did a poll, and two-thirds of those viewed Sheen as unfavorably, but apparently that's higher than Palin. Among independent voters, 41% said they would cast their ballot for Sheen, while only 36% they would cast their ballot for Palin.
Wow. I have a question, though. Did you get your tickets yet?
What tickets?
For his tour.
Okay.
He's, you know he is having a tour.
Yeah, I know. If you listened to the program the other night, we talked about him selling out in 18 minutes.
Wow.
Thanks for being here.
Wow. No, I... Well, I knew that, and I was informed by the show.
There you go.
That's why I asked. Did you get your tickets?
I did not, no. And I don't have the $35 to $70 to waste. It's the...
Actually, I'm not so sure I wouldn't go just to see what he had to say.
I hope somebody puts it on YouTube so I can watch it. So, and I don't have to pay for it. Anyway, here's another weird thing in talking about polling. It turns out that the people at the public policy polling place has done another poll asking about Scott Walker and other GOP presidential candidates. Turns out Walker has a better favorability rate than everybody else. Walker had a 55% favorable opinion with only 11% unfavorable rating. So between that's 44%. Or 44 points. So they go through and they score Huckabee, who had a 42-point spread. Palin had a 40-point spread. Romney had a 21-point spread. And Gingrich had a 19-point spread. So Gingrich is pulling up the rear. And there's no joke there, unless you want to go into the whole Defense of Marriage Act thing. But yeah, he's pulling up the rear there in the numbers poll. And again, I think I agree with Conyers. If the Republicans could muster a reasonable candidate, Obama might have to worry about something. It's like frickin' frack out there. And good.
Frickin' frack, and the one that I consider one legitimate candidate, they're gonna destroy.
Oh, they're gonna
chew Romney up.
As well they should. the Republicans always talk about how they hate being the racist party. Well, turns out, one of their congressional candidates, Jack Davis, he said in a Republican Party endorsement meeting that Latino farm workers should be deported and that inner-city African Americans should be bused to the farms to pick crops. What is it about these rich guys from New York? You remember the guy who ran for governor? Wasn't it Palladino or something like that? Said they were going to use the prisons as, teach people how to take care of themselves, personal hygiene. And you go, really? This is kind of why the party has gotten such a bad name. Just kind of why. I don't know. But again, he's running for the spot that's open because Chris Lee, the guy who Mr. Craigslist, with his shirt off looking for a little action on the side. What is it about Republicans and getting a little on the side? I don't know. Amazing stuff. But his seat is open in New York's 26th congressional district, so you've got another crazy guy vying for that seat. So that'll be interesting. That'll be an interesting day. So anyway, what was I thinking? Do you ever have one of those moments where you go, I had a thought I was going to go in a different direction, and someone did something to distract you? Our producer gave me the finger. And meaning that there's 1 minute left, and I just kind of went blank. And it's one of those
moments. I'm sure it'll come back to
you. It's one of those moments I'm used to getting the finger. I drove a truck for years, and a slow truck at that. the company I worked for, the trucks were pegged at 61 miles an hour. So you could be going uphill at like 8 miles an hour, and you'd have old ladies on walkers walking next to you giving you the finger. That's how bad it was sometimes. But I kind of miss those good old days, people flipping you off. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back with Nick Milroy, Wisconsin State Representative.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to Wind
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Thousands of workers and their supporters sent a message to the Republican government of Michigan on Wednesday. Jesse Russell reports.
Thousands descended on the capital of Michigan Wednesday to express their concerns over legislation that would grant the state the power to appoint emergency financial managers who could strip teachers and workers of collective bargaining rights. The taxpayers were also concerned about a budget that provides $1.8 billion in tax cuts to business, while making up for those cuts on the backs of low-income workers. Michigan Nurses Association President Jeff Breslin.
It's a personal insult to nurses and to everybody here to watch as our state government deliberately and maliciously propose laws that leave deep, bleeding cuts in our patients, our families, and our communities' lives.
Jerry Alpizer is a small business owner from Traverse City, Michigan, and he wants to know where his tax break is.
And I count myself among you because I don't get tax breaks. If I don't make money, I don't get a bailout. This trickle-down crap is over.
State Senator Coleman Young Jr., son of Detroit's first African-American mayor, told the crowd that it was time to draw a line in the sand.
If we rise with one voice and say, you will not take our rights, you will not take our liberties, and we will not let this day give us liberty or give us death.
American Postal Workers Union members will soon be voting on a tentative contract agreement that was reached this week. APWU President Cliff Guffey says it provides a 3.5% pay raise over the course of the contract, protects retirement and health care benefits, and safeguards jobs. And Guffey says it underscores that public worker collective bargaining works.
With workers across the country fighting to defend their right to collective bargaining, our tentative agreement is a testament to the value of a great American freedom, the right of workers to have a voice at work and to negotiate for a better life. We are grateful that we continue to enjoy this right, and we stand in solidarity with workers across the country who are fighting to keep it for themselves.
U.S. Representative Jan Schakowsky has heard the call of workers in protests nationwide that in order to really fix government deficits, the rich have to pay their fair share. Schakowsky has introduced the Fairness in Taxation Act in Congress. It creates a new tax bracket for income $1 million a year and above, and would also tax capital gains and dividends as ordinary income for those making $1 million a year or more. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hard-working men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, under the category of hell hath no fury as a woman scorned, you have to love the fact that the guy who's the state senator from Wisconsin, that his wife is going to have the opportunity to really stick it to her cheating spouse. I find it's amazing. So while he's stepping out living with his 25-year-old mistress, his wife gets to sign the petition to have him recalled. I think that's amazing. I wonder if he tried to use the defense like Newt Gingrich. I just love my state, and I work so hard. I wonder. Anyway, a lot going on in Wisconsin. The recall effort, from what I understand, going pretty well. And to fill us in on what's going on there is State Representative Nick Milroy. Nick, welcome to the program.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate having the guy who's got probably the best giant Twitter fish on the Internet out there.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
My producer loves the giant fish. What's going on right now? How are things going? Where are we moving towards?
Well, things are going really good, Rick. We're moving from the big rallies in the Capitol, and we're spreading out to every corner of the state, and we're taking this fight to every small town and every big city across Wisconsin and everywhere in between. And I couldn't be more excited for the enthusiasm that I'm seeing everywhere I go, not only to recall the senators and recall Scott Walker, but to make sure we're going to fight until the end, until we get our collective bargaining rights back.
You know, I was looking at some numbers, and it says that the University of Wisconsin is looking at a 25% tuition increase because of the governor's actions. And I look here in Pennsylvania, we've got a governor who wants to cut 54% from higher education. Part of the game plan that it looks like, you know, the Republicans have across the country. But I looked at that 25% at UW. That, to me, a bit excessive.
It is, and it's just going to put a higher education out of reach of more middle-class families and their children. And, you know, when Scott Walker was first elected, one of the first things he said was Wisconsin was open for business. But, you know, what kind of business climate do you have in a state when you don't value education? And that's exactly what we're seeing with Scott Walker's budget.
Well, it is a good business practice for them when you can destroy workers' rights and you can basically hold people hostage and make them work for slave wages. I think that's good for business, isn't it?
It's not good for business because what we're going to see in Wisconsin and we're already starting to see is a brain drain. I live on a border community. We just lost one of our assistant district attorneys to Minnesota because he felt that, you know, his work wasn't being dignified in Wisconsin. And we're seeing a lot of teachers that are upset, and we're going to see poor morale, and it's going to lead to less productivity.
You know, one of the things I've been talking about for the longest time is when we were there, for the time we were there, the folks kept saying that, you know, this is what democracy looks like. The people came together. They got health care for people who needed it at the Capitol. They had food for people who needed it. They had child care. The citizens coming to their government solving problems. To me, that is what democracy looks like. I wish your governor and I wish our governor would see that.
Yeah, unfortunately, our governor locked the people out of their building, right out of the state capitol.
Yeah, and I saw you got gang tackled.
Yeah, I did. They're not even letting legislators in unless you're a Republican, I guess. They're using a secret rat hole to get in, and they have escorts to get to and from the building. But when a legislator like myself, who's a Democrat, tries to get in, they've changed the rules so many times that law enforcement doesn't know what's going on half the time, and you have an incident like what happened when I tried to get in the other night.
You know, I look at this and I say, is this what the people voted for? Because, you know, I got to be honest, you know, the people wanted some change, but this seems to me to be radical change.
Well, this is a major overreach, and that's why we've had hundreds of thousands of people stand up to let their voices be heard in Wisconsin, and it's been a sustained effort. And now those people are working diligently in their districts. You know, we have a new industry sprouting up all across Wisconsin. It's called recalling Republican senators, and we're going to make it happen.
You know, I look at the guy, you know, Mr. Hopper, Senator Hopper, who has his problems.
Right.
You know, what's going on with that? I mean, I've read that maybe he's not living in the district. Maybe there's some problems there. There's been, I guess, a lawsuit filed. What's going on there?
Well, you know, obviously Senator Hopper has some real difficult things that he's dealing with right now. But, you know, one of the most difficult things he's going to be dealing with is this recall campaign. He didn't listen to the people of Wisconsin, and they're going to stand up and recall him. He won his election as a freshman. It's the first time he ran by less than 200 votes. So he's running scared. He's hired a big-wig D.C. political operative to come in and run his campaign. But I'll tell you what, all the money in the world isn't going to save these people who turn their back on Wisconsin workers.
Yeah, I love his ad. I got his ad. You got to hear this. This is, I'm sure you have, but I want to play it for my listeners. This is beautiful.
Another day, another protest in Madison.
Yeah, I know. With nearly 8% unemployment, you'd think asking government workers for 5% towards their retirement and 12% for their health care costs would be acceptable.
That's reasonable, but union bosses want to keep bargaining for more perks.
I heard a teachers union in Milwaukee sued to add Viagra to their health plan. Would have cost taxpayers nearly $1 million. Or the union bus driver in Madison making $160,000 a year. Much of it from overtime pay due to collective bargaining.
Wisconsin is nearly $4 billion in debt. We can't afford this. Are these the same union bosses that want to recall Randy Hopper?
Yes, they want to handpick a senator that'll vote the way they tell him to.
Oh, yeah.
But Randy Hopper is working to balance the budget and create jobs. He's fighting for taxpayers. We have to support Randy Hopper.
Paid for by Randy Hopper.
Yeah, I listen to that and I go, really? Is that reality? I mean, what's funny is he makes light of the protesters, kind of just poo-poos it away. A couple people, you know, upset. not the 150,000 that were there protesting him. No, just a couple of people.
Well, I'll tell you what, Rick. I was listening to Wisconsin Public Radio yesterday, and there was a Republican state representative on, and when asked about the protesters, he poo-pooed it by saying, oh, it was just a bunch of students from the campus, and then they just bust in a bunch of people from California and Peoria, Illinois. I mean, how delusional can you be when there's 100,000 people on the lawn of the Capitol 3 weekends in a row from every corner of the state that you're going to try to make believe in your own little fantasy world that they're coming from as far away as California and filling up the lawn of the Capitol? It's as delusional as Fox TV is with their palm trees in the background.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and what I loved about the commercial was a couple of things. The Viagra thing was beautiful. That was great because that enrages people. What? I got to pay for someone else's fun? How dare they?
Well, I don't know if Randy Hopper's on Viagra or not.
You know, but the thing that I've been focusing on, and this is, I guess, a bigger question. You got the bus driver who did make $159,000 working 90 hours a week, which I'm going, one, do we really need people working 90 hours a week? But the thing that it doesn't say is that the bus company and the union came together and negotiated that kind of a way and solved the problem at the bargaining table.
Exactly. You know, it's interesting. They like to point out people that make just over, you know, the $100,000 mark. I know they were attacking people that work for unions that are, you know, in charge of tens of thousands of people, if not hundreds of thousands of people across the state. In fact, one of our statewide newspapers made a big fuss about it. The funny thing is the CEO of that newspaper made over $2 million last year. You're not going to see that printed across every newspaper in the state of Wisconsin.
And that's the kind of thing that really needs to be pointed out. I mean, and what I was talking about, how I shared, like, you got a bus driver working 93 hours a week, making $159,000, and you got a CEO of a company like Johnson & Johnson who's failing, and their board of directors gave him almost $29 million. Nobody blinks an eye at the $29 million, but that bus driver, oh, how dare we have to pay that?
Yeah, I don't think the bus driver is spending 20 hours a week on the golf course either. I mean, these people are out there, they're working 98 hours a week is a heck of a long time to be out there driving a bus. You know, we got to have more respect for our public workers, and they're trying to, you know, pit middle-class person against middle-class person in this state, and it's just not going to work.
I got to tell you, Nick, I wouldn't want to do something I love for 90 hours a week, even if I needed Viagra.
I'm not going to go there, Rick.
But what I'm saying is I'm not going to spend 90 hours a week doing something I like.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's pretty excessive. So, you know, they try to find these outliers and try to make a big deal about it. But then, you know, you don't hear about the CEOs of Johnson & Johnson. You don't hear about the CEO of the Milwaukee State Journal. And you certainly don't hear about how much David Koch and his brother are worth.
Yeah, I mean, are you getting a lot of feedback on that phony phone call? And look, it was a phony phone call. Now we know, but, your governor didn't know it at the time. He was spilling his guts. Have you seen much in the way of fallout because of that?
Everybody I talk to is just absolutely disgusted by the things that they've heard on that phone call. I think we need to use it more. I mean, the people need to know who Scott Walker's bosses are. And they need to know that this guy contemplated putting goons into a crowd of 100,000 people to try to incite violence. I mean, that's unacceptable.
I mean, can you imagine what could have happened if they would have done that? The kind of now, look, when I was in Wisconsin, I think the woman, I was expecting, you know, goons, I was expecting chaos, riots, I was expecting that. Actually, I was kind of hoping for it. But all, you know, Teamster 21 years, you know, I kind of like that stuff. Yeah, nothing wrong with it. But when I got there, all I found were cookies and bratwurst.
Well, that's exactly how we are in Wisconsin. I mean, these weren't the goon squads. These were the working class people that came from every corner of the state. I had busloads of people come from my district. A lot of teachers, a lot of public employees. They've worked their tails off for years and years and years, and they just want a fair shake at things, and they feel their work is not dignified when they have a governor that's going after their livelihoods.
So last question I've got for you, and I appreciate you coming on the program. It's great having you. You know, the folks here in Pennsylvania, you know, the reason we came out to Wisconsin was, one, to be part of what I think is going to be history, and two, to show the folks back here, back in our listening area, how we have to handle things, where we go from here once the attacks start, as they've been going on there. What advice would you give us?
Well, you have to be organized, and you have to be enthusiastic. I mean, we are seeing so much optimism and enthusiasm in every small town, every corner of Wisconsin. People are all there. They're talking to their friends and neighbors. They're getting people to sign the recall petition. It's all about organization and making sure that people keep that fire burning.
Yeah. Did you get your picture taken with Willie Nelson?
With Willie Nelson?
Yeah.
Is he down in Madison?
Yeah, wasn't he in Madison?
I was not down there last weekend. I wish I would have. I got my picture taken with Reverend Jesse Jackson.
There you go.
So, you know, I'm hoping one of my heroes from the state of, I don't even know what state he's from, but John Lewis, Representative Lewis, will come up to Wisconsin. That's who I want my picture with.
I believe Michigan. Nick, I appreciate your time, brother. Thanks so much. I look forward to having you back again as this goes down the road. Nick Milroy, Wisconsin State Representative. Thanks again, brother.
Hey, thanks, Rick. We'll have to get you back to Wisconsin and get you into one of those muskies.
There we go.
All right.
So I can have a Twitter fish of my own.
There you go.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break right back after this one. 888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
They cut all our hours by Washington decree. So here I stand with a long line of cars, everyone yelling at me. When did I become a problem? How did the fall become all mine? The president says, tightening their belt, the only one to tighten is mine.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Every state legislature has its share of incompetent, insensitive, and often incomprehensible goobers sitting in seats of power. Sometimes you have to wonder who helps them work the doorknobs to get out of their houses each morning. For some reason, Texas seems to have more than its share of grade-A goobers serving in our state capital. One is Debbie Riddle, a right-wing Republican ideologue from the town of Tomball. Representative Riddle is presently in a pout. She's offended that so many people have been offended by an immigration bill she introduced. It calls for fining and jailing people who, quote, intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly hire undocumented immigrants. Okay, that's a pretty popular position in our state, but then she stumbled and tumbled by adding a little exemption. People who hire unauthorized laborers to work in their homes will not be fined or jailed. Yes, it's a nanny loophole for the privileged class. They rail about people they callously brand as illegal aliens. Yet, they want a steady supply of these low-wage powerless workers to care for their children, clean their houses, and tend their yards. They don't want to mess with checking documents, so Debbie blithely gives them a pass, allowing them to hate illegals and have them, too. How happy! She then demonstrated her deep grasp of the immigration issue by explaining that Latinos are coming into our state illegally because we put, quote, a big old bowl of candy out for them. Yeah, Madam Lawmaker, those housekeeping and yard jobs, as well as chicken plucking and roofing jobs, are plenty cushy and well-paying, which is why so many of your neighbors are scrambling to grab such work for themselves. This is Jim Hightower saying, pious politicos should try walking in the shoes of people they denigrate before they legislate. Reality can be a useful teacher if you're willing to listen to reality.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.com.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
I got 800 miles of floating board right outside my door. There's Minutemen in little pickup trucks who declared their own dang war. Now the government wants to build a barrier like old Berlin, 8 feet tall. But if Uncle Sam sends the illegals home, who's gonna build the wall?
Hi. why? That's the question. You know, you got that guy in Kansas who thinks what we should be doing is flying around in helicopters, shooting the illegals like we do the pigs. And you got the guy in New York who said, well, we got to ship them home and use those Negroes. Get them out there picking the crops. And yet, they're not the racist party. No. They're just good, honest, good white folk. I'm a little weird about that. Just a little bit weird. Anyway, who's going, you know, this whole idea of globalization, this whole idea of trade as we've really had it rammed down our throat, is killing us in the working class. What's happened is we've seen jobs move to Mexico. We've seen jobs move to China, to India, all around the globe. And it's not because, those unions demand wages. You know, anything above a buck an hour is too much. So this ridiculous notion that, well, you know, those people, they want health care and they want pensions. They want days off. How dare they want that? That's not the reason. The reason is cheaper labor anywhere else. But we just don't seem to get it. And there aren't many companies out there who you look to and you say, well, you know, they're a decent person. Whirlpool. You know, one of these companies, the Detroit News said, has increased its revenues by 33%. And they're actually talking about staying. The chairman of and CEO said, I've never seen more opportunities for growth than I see today. We're very confident in the future of U.S. manufacturing. Now, they're going talking about Michigan, because they've got a couple of plants that are doing really, really well. They are the world's largest appliance maker, and, you know, they want to increase their revenues from their products, refrigerators, washers, dryers, that kind of stuff. By 2014, they're looking to make $24 billion. It produces about 50 million appliances a year, and 82% of the products are made here in the U.S., which, you know, again, this is one of these things that you've got to give these people credit for. The company, they have a plant in Michigan, employs about 4,000 workers there. They say that they get their best ideas from the people on the shop floor. He said, we started there, and we always want to stay in the Benton Harbor area. It's our home. Whirlpool plans to spend about $300 million in investments in Mexico, in Michigan. See, they even got me thinking about it. But because it's so normal. You know, whenever you hear these big companies, Jake, it's always they're going to invest in Mexico. It's very odd that you're going to get a company like this to stay and invest in this country. Now, there's a couple possibilities why. Michigan's really in a depressed economy, and wages, I'm sure, will be a little lower. Probably almost as bad as in the South and in the right-to-work states.
Well, what some of these corporations, it's kind of a deep, dark secret. What they don't want you to know, some of their overseas operations haven't gone that well. Why? Well, it could be political unrest. It could be a lack of ability, lack of education on the part of the workforce. It could be a whole raft of things depending on the socioeconomic conditions in that country. It's not just, you know, the price of labor is not just the cost of what you're paying for your employee. It's the cost of doing business in that country. It's the cost of the shifting political and economic conditions. Some of these companies have found out, you know what, we can do better in the United States. We're going to pay a little bit more, but in the end, we're going to make more money.
Another story on the trade front. General Motors is calling for a halt to its production on Monday in Shreveport, Louisiana. They're going to stop making the Chevy Colorado and the GMC Canyon pickup trucks because they can't get parts from Japan. The parts manufacturers in Japan, unfortunately, because of this tsunami and this earthquake, have been wiped away. There are some parts problems there. So, again, you know, this for me, reason why we should be doing this stuff. We should be building this stuff right here at home. And I talk about, you know, the Ford and the Chevy plants when I was a kid. You know, they were right there on Brook Park Road. They were about a mile apart from each other. And the entire road from one end of it to the other, small little manufacturing plants that fed those two giants. So you had the parts people right there. I mean, it was a perfect industrial scenario. But what we've done is by having this bizarre globalization is we've put parts all over the world. So when you have a hiccup or you have a crisis like this in Japan or a hiccup in some other portion of the world, you have a problem.
I remember when we went out to Wisconsin, we stopped in that area. That was a huge, huge area. You're probably talking, Rick, in that area, tens of thousands of jobs.
Oh, easy.
Just in the Cleveland area. You multiply that times several hundred across the country, and you get an idea of what we've done to this nation. How we've just carved out the manufacturing base. Speaking of manufacturing, we talked about it on this show. China has passed the United States as the world's biggest producer of goods, the world's biggest manufacturer. We've held that title for 110 years. Well, there's an organization, a business organization called the U.S. Council on Competitiveness, that had a different kind of take on things. This is what they said. This shows the need for the U.S. to compete in the future, not on the basis of commodity manufacturing, but on innovation and new kinds of services that are driven by production industries. Actually, it doesn't really work that way. Manufacturing goods leads to research and development. R&D doesn't happen in a vacuum. That's one big reason manufacturing is still so important in a 21st century economy. In fact, they have it backwards. You have to have a manufacturing base first before you can have R&D. So they have it a little bit backwards.
Completely backwards.
And then you have the neuter, our buddy, the House Speaker, presidential wannabe, said last week that the North American Free Trade Agreement worked because it created jobs in Mexico and Canada. And it makes you wonder. These people supposedly represent the interests of the United States. It absolutely.
There's no question that at times in my life, partially driven by how passionately I felt about this country, that I worked far too hard and that things happened in my life that were not appropriate.
On another front, and we've talked about this repeatedly, Rick, what, the last 4 or 5 years at least, Colombian Free Trade Agreement, they're at it again. The AFL-CIO came out with a statement today. This is the reason that many in Congress oppose it, and that certainly labor opposes it. Colombia remains the most deadly nation in the world in which to be a free trade unionist. In the past 25 years, more than 2,850 trade unionists have been murdered in Colombia. Last year alone, 51 trade unionists were murdered, which is an increase over 2009. The conviction rate for murders and other forms of violence remains intolerably low. As the document issued by the AFL-CIO clearly indicates, the only acceptable situation in Colombia is one in which these murders have ceased completely and a new climate of safety is sustained over time. In addition, Colombia labor laws, regulations, and practices require serious reform. For years, the International Labor Organization has identified serious flaws with regard to freedom of association, the right to bargain collectively, and the right to strike. The widespread use of indirect forms of employment, such as cooperatives, which are used for the purpose of stripping workers of their fundamental rights, must end. The AFL-CIO remains strongly opposed to the U.S.-Colombian Free Trade Agreement. And by the way, several years ago, they changed presidents. I believe President Uribe, who promised to come in and really address that issue, really address the issue and do something about the issue of murders of labor union leaders. He did a lot of promising, but as of yet, he hasn't really done enough. There's a lot of murders that have never been brought to justice. The situation in that country, Rick, remains intolerable. And other than the fact that some corporations want to get in there and we see an opportunity to make a lot of money, we shouldn't have that free trade agreement. We really don't need it. And the situation in Colombia, for all sense and purpose, for all decent standards, really hasn't changed in the last 5 years. And until it does, there's no reason to approve that.
All righty, let's take a quick break. Right back with you. Right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know, I told you once tonight that you could always speak your mind. You worked so hard to say what's right. I watched you do it all the time.
The Rick. Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
And now from Washington, D.C., and the talk radio news service person of the night, Victoria Jones, our Washington Bureau Chief. Victoria, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you. I'm delighted.
What's going on in Washington?
Well, as you know, the UN Security Council has authorized military strikes on Libya today. And U.S. and European officials are saying that air attacks against Gaddafi's forces are possible within hours. The Pentagon is fine-tuning military options for serious strikes against ground and air targets if the White House orders them, according to U.S. defense officials. And they could include things like cruise missiles to take out fixed Libyan military sites and air defense systems, that kind of thing. Now, Washington is very reluctant for any kind of military operation to be seen as American-led.
Right.
And NATO involvement is possible, but because NATO is a consensus organization, there was an abstention by Germany at the UN, and any possible objection from Turkey would put in doubt whether agreement on NATO involvement is possible. So it still remains to be seen exactly how this is going to work.
Well, the international community is going to have to figure out how to deal with this, because I don't think we can.
Exactly. They're going to have to figure it out, and they're going to have to figure it out very quickly, and I think they will.
At least I hope so, or they're going to show that they're completely irrelevant, and maybe then you start buying into what the right's been saying about them for years. What else is going on?
The Senate passed a short-term spending measure today that includes some pretty easy cuts. 87-13, expected to be signed by President Obama before he leaves for South America tomorrow. It's the sixth continuing resolution passed by Congress this fiscal year, and I think it's the last relatively easy one. This one funds the government for another 3 weeks, and I have to say that coming up to April the 8th, which is the end of this one, the next one's going to be much more difficult. You've got many of the more conservative Republicans, particularly in the House, saying that they won't do it, particularly if there is funding for Planned Parenthood and the health care bill in it. And you've got many Democrats saying they're not interested in funding the government in 2- and 3-week periods. So I think there's going to be real pressure on Senator Reid and Speaker Boehner to try and make some kind of a deal.
Well, they're going to have to, because this is no way to run a country. I mean, come on. At some point, the folks who are investing in your country are going to go, if you can't get your stuff together, we'll go somewhere else.
Exactly. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see how they're going to do it. Now, of course, nothing's going to happen next week because the president's gone to South America and all of Congress is on a recess for a week. Everything's going to grind to a halt.
What else do we have?
The president spoke in the Rose Garden this afternoon about Japan, about the U.S. response to Japan, and about what's happening to Americans. He wanted everyone to know that in terms of risk to the U.S., they do not expect harmful levels of radiation to reach the West Coast, Hawaii, Alaska, territories in the Pacific, in the judgment of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and many other experts. And also that the CDC and public health officials do not recommend taking precautions beyond being informed, saying that they will keep us updated. He also said, you must know what I know as president. Also today in Congress, there was a bill passed by the House to defund National Public Radio. This is something that was considered an emergency by Republicans and something that Democrats in the House poured scorn on, and for those of your audience who are actually looking for a good laugh, there is a 3-minute video of Representative Anthony Weiner of New York making fun of this, excoriating it is the right word, as he goes on about click and clack car talk.
Well, I guess it does show the priorities of the Republican Party. They claimed this whole sweep, them sweeping into Congress was about jobs and about the economy. I'm sorry, I'm missing this whole NPR thing.
I think many people are. NPR gets a few hundred million dollars a year, and we're talking about well over a trillion. The other thing that failed today was Representative Dennis Kucinich's resolution, which was to say that the U.S. had to leave Afghanistan. It was expected to fail, but he brings this up periodically, and it nevertheless gets debate, and it does keep it on the radar, because the Afghan war, generally speaking, is not very much on the radar in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, $133 billion this year we're going to spend in Afghanistan. And the Republicans, their grand scheme, defund public radio, $3.2 million.
It's interesting.
What else you got going for in Washington tonight?
Well, I do have something from outside Washington, if you'd like a little dessert.
All righty.
In Texas. Unlike many other states, Texas doesn't ban workplace discrimination based on gender identity, sexual orientation, or marital status. But they've introduced a bill that would establish workplace protections for proponents of intelligent design.
Please tell me that's not
an
true.
An institute of higher education may not discriminate against or penalize in any manner, especially with regard to employment or academic support, a faculty member or student based on the faculty members or students' conduct of research relating to the theory of intelligent design or other alternate theories of the origination and development of organisms.
Interesting. So the Great Spaghetti Monster could be investigated then.
That's absolutely correct.
Great. You got to love Texas. Where else would we get a good laugh? Victoria Jones, I appreciate your time. Talk Radio News Service. I'll talk to you again tomorrow night.
Thank you very much.
All righty. To find out what's going on in Harrisburg, what do you got for us tonight, Jake?
2/3 of Pennsylvania adults oppose budget cuts to education. 78% of Pennsylvanians oppose cutting funding to local school districts, and 67% dislike the idea of slashing funding in half of the state's public universities, according to a recently released Franklin Marshall College poll. poll found nearly 40% of residents want to cut state programs and services to balance the state budget, but they strongly oppose the cuts Governor Tom Corbett has proposed to education. Corbett's proposed spending plan would cut funding in half for the 14 state-owned universities, including Penn State, Pitt, Temple, and Lincoln Universities. He is also proposing to cut about $1 billion in K-12 educational spending. While most residents oppose hikes in the state sales tax, 60%, and income tax, 68% of the electorate, there are some taxes they would broadly support. 72% support taxing cigars and smokeless tobacco, and 62% support taxing companies that extract and sell natural gas. Corbett has promised not to raise or create any new taxes. A slight majority, 52%, say they support extending the state sales tax to include items that are now exempt, compared to 45% who oppose the idea. Typically, what we see here are Pennsylvanians don't support general tax hikes, says Terry Madonna, the poll's director. But they also oppose cuts to specific programs. So state government is in the enviable position of having to balance a budget without popular support for increased taxes, while they did not favor the specific tax cuts proposed by the governor. So there you have it, some interesting figures. In general, the public is not pleased with his cuts in education specifically, Rick.
Well, you go back and you look at the election on Tuesday. The reality is that was a referendum, in my opinion, of the policies that this governor's rolling out. And I think as we move forward, you're going to see them move on this, because this is all political gamesmanship. Understand that they're going to restore some of the funding for education. And you're going to have Republicans, and you're going to be able to come back and see, look what I did. Look how I fought for you. But at the end of it, you and I are still going to get the shaft. It's just a matter of how badly. And that's what bothers me, is that, you know, the news is going to report this stuff. But at the end of the day, they just leave it short enough. Just short enough. So when we get screwed, they go, oh, well, you know, it wasn't as
well,
bad.
Well, according to some on the Hill, they're playing games with this. It's a shell game. What they'll do is eventually put some of that money back to education, but they'll take it from, let's say, welfare, and then they can come back and they have political cover and say, well, see, the public wanted us to fund education. But at the same time, what they're doing is taking out of programs that they wanted to slash anyway. So there's some gamesmanship being played here.
Yep, a little bit of political gamesmanship. Interesting stuff. Anyway, today in labor history... leadership of the American Federation of Labor selected the Carpenters Union to lead the eight-hour movement on this day back in 1890. Carpenters throughout the country went on strike in April, and by May 1st, some 46,000 carpenters in 137 cities and towns across this country had achieved shorter hours. You know, and you go back and you stop me and think about this stuff. We've taken for granted pretty much my entire lifetime. The eight-hour day. Yeah, we have no idea how hard it was and how long the fight was, because you'd win a little bit and then there'd be setbacks. You'd win a little bit, there'd be setbacks, and you know they stole all of those gains back when the next depression happened, when the next economic downturn happened, because they always play the same card. Oh, we need to sacrifice. We need to all sacrifice, shared sacrifice. While they're doing just fine. While they're reaping the reward, those handful at the very top, you and I are the ones who are constantly sacrificing. And, you know, I think, as Kevin Mahoney said, the best book for people to read is Naomi Klein's Shock Doctrine. I think it is spot-on accurate. It's a long book, though, but it is worth reading. Also, on this day in labor history, 1968, I was all of 1 year old, staffers at San Francisco's progressive rock station, KMPX-FM, they went on strike. And why did they go on strike? Well, they were angry over the corporate control of what music was being played and the harassment of their attire, you know, their hair and their clothing, because after all, that was the beginning of the long hair, the long hair time. Jefferson Airplane, Joan Baez, the Rolling Stones, the Grateful Dead, and numerous other musicians told the station, stop playing our music. As long as you're breaking that strike, as long as you're sticking it to those workers, stop playing our music. You know, and I go back to, you know, when the whole time people talk about where is that protest music, where is that music of this generation that's going to get people all fired up in Wisconsin and across the country. Where is the message? Where is the message in the music? I think that's a pretty strong message when you've got those kind of bands telling a very big station, don't play our stuff anymore. Keep it to yourself until you fix that strike. I wish we would see things like that again today. But, you know, here's the thing. You had Willie Nelson in, and I'm not a big Willie fan. I know people who listen to this station probably are. Not a big fan, though, but you got to give the guy credit. He is someone who's willing to go out and stand with the people. If you remember back in the 80s, he was one of the people with the Farm Aid.
Farm Aid, yes.
And did some great work
very
with
effective.
That. But, again, you know, it's all about, for me, it's all about community. It's all about coming together.
We talk about people going to the streets. I can tell you this, and I'm a little older than you, so I can say this because I went through it. I do believe to this day the big reason we got out of the war was because of this huge, huge outpouring of dissent over the war. Hundreds of thousands, week after week after week, went to the streets, and yes, it got ugly, and it was really a struggle. I mean, there were a lot of young people with long hair, but there were also older people who just felt that, you know, the way the war was being conducted, we couldn't win it. It turned into a war of attrition, and eventually, public opinion won the day, but it took people by the millions going to the street. And I'm afraid that's what's gonna have to happen in this country, Rick.
Well, when are we gonna see
it again?
Have
to go to the street.
We're spending $113 billion this year in Afghanistan. We're talking about cutting education. We're talking about cutting social programs, cutting things down to the bone, spending $113 billion. We got money to make sand smaller. I think we should have money to educate our future. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come on, you good workers, good news to you out there. Pull out the good old
Well, you know, here's the thing, Jake. You always bust my shoes about my not really liking Bill Clinton. You know, I think he was a great speaker. I think he was an intelligent guy. But, you know, I got to be honest. I'm not always a big fan. And I look at this story at Working in These Times. Carl Finnemore writes yesterday, and I guess I'm not surprised. He writes yesterday, former President Bill Clinton spoke at an event in San Francisco at the Westin St. Francis, a hotel which is subject of a worker called boycott endorsed by Unite Here Local 2, the San Francisco Labor Council, AFL-CIO, and by a number of political, religious, and community organizations. Turns out a former president, Bill Clinton, ignored the boycott, but could not avoid union members inside, who confirmed he was present. The former president takes upwards of $350,000 every time he steps to the podium, with $65 million documented in speaking fees since leaving office through 2009. Now, Starwood Hotels and Resorts, the managers of the Westin St. Francis, are not doing so badly financially either. According to February 4th, 2011, Wall Street Journal, Starwood's revenue rose 7.5% last year to $1.3 billion. Yeah, I got to be honest. You know, I'm not surprised. But it's, again, you know, this idea, and Republicans love to throw this out there, that, well, you know, unions got the Democratic Party in their back pocket. You know, big union bosses, you know, they own the Democratic Party. No, you know, and this is another example of, no. I was never a huge Bill Clinton fan. He was better, a little bit better than H.W. Bush, and he was a little bit better than Bob Dole, because Bob Dole, you know, likes Bob Dole. You never trust anybody who talks about themselves in the third person. You know, I know Bob Dole, and Bob Dole is, you know, Bob Dole. But I look at this man, and I just, you know, and I know there's some people out there who, you know, think I'm this big Democrat. I'm not. I'm a working class guy. I'm a labor guy. And I look at somebody like Clinton, and it angers and frustrates me that, you know, you're going to walk across that line.
Well, I know he deregulated your industry, and I understand perfectly. I guess incrementally, I look at the.
No, it was Carter who deregulated the industry, not Clinton.
No, it was okay, but he was a corporate Democrat. I'll say this for him: when he was in office, the economy was doing pretty good. I have reservations about it. If he crossed the picket line, you know, shame on him. Shame on him.
Well, I don't remember Republicans walking over my picket line. I don't know. Look, at the end of this, you know, it is what it is. Again, another example of maybe labor and the Democratic Party are not one and the same, as they want to make us believe.
If I remember, there were some deregulation efforts when he was in that he signed. I believe there were some key bills that he signed. I think the bill which allowed banks to become investment companies happened during his watch, I believe.
Oh, that was the huge one. That was the Gramm-Leach-Bliley, the telecom bill of 96. There's a whole bunch. We've gone through this, and I've told you a lot of my problems with Clinton. And they're those. Those are huge. NAFTA's huge.
NAFTA's another one.
But, you know, I don't know. You know, it's almost not worth talking about anymore. It was the Financial Modernization Act of 1999 that I credit with bringing our economy to its knees, led by Phil Graham, a Republican from Texas, led by Jim Leach, a Republican from Iowa, and Thomas Bliley, a Republican from Virginia. Again, you know, it's all about the Benjamins. And, you know, a corporate Democrat, you know, look, Clinton was Republican light. Moved the party to the middle, and as the Gingriches of the world ran to the extreme right, he followed just so he could stay in the center. So, again, you know, I guess it's not worth going into because he is the ex-president, but still.
Well, shame on him. I mean, he angered us during the campaign, especially when he ran for, what was her name from Arkansas?
Blanche Lincoln. Blanche a name Lincoln. I would rather forget.
Blanche Lincoln.
A name I would rather forget.
And probably because of his efforts, at least she eventually lost in general, but in the primary she won. She should have lost. Yeah. Should have lost to a progressive.
Yeah, well, I don't know that Halter was all that progressive, but he was not her.
Comparatively, Rick, he was. He was to her left.
He wouldn't take a stance on the Employee Free Choice Act. He was not going to be a great friend either. He was going to be better than her, but not an awful lot better.
No, he did get labor support.
Yeah, of course he did, because he wasn't her. Anyway, Atlanta-based Beezer Homes USA, according to the Atlanta Business Chronicle, their directors are being sued by shareholders who say the home builders' compensation plans basically shortchange investors by giving their managers big money, big rewards for shoddy, poor work. That's a report from Bloomberg Businessweek. The company posted $34 million in losses last year and approved pay raises for their chief executive officer, Ian McCarthy. Because, you know, you need to keep the best qualified people when you're going down. The captain of the ship that's sinking, you need the best qualified. Right? Really? Right? Isn't that what we're being told? They gave out a bunch of other bonuses to other executives. And in doing so, the company did not act in the shareholders' best interests. That's according to two Teamster lawyers who are saying, hey, our pension fund's getting screwed by this. And they have filed a lawsuit. You want to know another reason why the Scott Walkers of the world want to destroy unions? Right there. You want to talk about a check and a balance? You want to talk about somebody keeping an eye on what's going on? Right there. Right there. Anyway, protesters interrupted a speech in Philadelphia. At the Philadelphia Marriott downtown, Sunoco Incorporated's chairwoman and chief executive Lynn Fleischens, or whatever her name is, was giving a speech. She was getting an award. I'm bad with names, man. You want a name butchered? Give it to me. I'll butcher it right up for you. I guess it's Elsenhans, I guess. As she began her speech, several people stood up and began to, carry signs and say some things, asking about the people who were laid off and jobs that were lost. In fact, one person said, does anyone see a leader here? Because she was giving a leadership award. Basically, what she's done is like all the CEOs. The more jobs she can cut, the more profit they make, the more bottom line they can enhance, the better for the shareholders and worse it is for the workers. Another one of those examples. Anyway, she gave her speech and the people had their voice heard, and the whole thing went on. They said that she doesn't often give speeches, and gee, you got to wonder why, because it is what it is. You want to take a look at some greed? Donald Trump has been in the news, and he's a good billionaire. I don't see him on the lists though, so I don't know that he's got the kind of billionaire money that gets you on the Forbes 400, but he's got a lot of money, and the Donald is currently making his way around the media landscape, inviting speculation that he might just run for president. In fact, he was on the, I think it was ABC show today. I watched a clip of basically saying, all these other people are idiots. I'm the Donald. I know how things are done. I'm right. And he bought into the whole birther thing. But what he's doing is he's showing off his new 757 Boeing jet. Spent $100 million. Bought it off of Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen. So he figures that he's going to have plenty of room for his presidential run. Understand that a 757, a Boeing 757, is made for 279 passengers, and the Donald will have his very own 757. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't it great when you can have when you can be in a country where the Donald can have his own 757? And paid probably less taxes than the guy flying the plane.
Well, I was happy to hear what he said about Social Security. He said, we don't really have to go after that. But then I heard today, like you said, Rick, that I heard his whole statement. He was kissing up to the birthers. He said, if you ask people in grade school And you ask people in high school if they remember me, they remember me. Well, according to Donald, nobody remembers the president. Well, that's just not true. They do remember the president, and they have pictures.
Maybe so. Anyway, thanks for being here. We'll see you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the sway. Imperial is